to order and welcome everybody. We're going to begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Are there any agenda changes, additions, deletions?
None this evening. Okay.
Time for public comments. Just for presentations on items that are not on the agenda.
Good afternoon. I am Jasmine Gonzalez. I am a 15-year-old freshman at Harbor High. I've been active in Tobago for 5 years, and over the course of those 5 years, I have become a dancer, musician, and now part of the board of Tobago. Good afternoon. My name is Daisy Estrada. I'm 15 years old, and I'm a sophomore at Harbor High School. I have been a part of Tobago for 4 years, and I'm now a dancer, musician, and board member of Tobago. So today we're going to talk about our Galagetza and the meaning and the importance of it. To start off, I would just like to give thanks for all the support we've received from the San Francisco City Schools Board.
First of all, Galagetza is a Zapotec word that means commitment to share and to cooperate. In our Galagetza, we try to share with our community our culture, our dances, and music. And we work hard each year to make Galagetza one of the most weighted events here in San Diego.
So just a little bit of background on the Galagetza. It is celebrated each summer in Oaxaca traditionally. It is a celebration to honor the gods for sufficient rainfall and a good harvest, so it has a good meaning in it.
Sendero's is a recreation of the Galagetza here in Santa Cruz. It's done each May, the third Sunday of each May. And it's a lively festival full of food, music, and dances.
So Sendero's has made this possible for 13 years now, and I think it has reinforced our relationship with the community. Sendero's has really impacted our lives because it has provided us with support, opportunities, and confidence, which as I think as Latinos is sometimes hard to find.
From behalf of Sendero's, we would like to invite you all to our 13th annual Galagetza this May 20th in our new location, the San Lorenzo Park.
So, the Galagetza for me is much more than just a festival. It is a way to express my culture, my identity. It's a way to keep my culture alive. It keeps me connected to my Mexican heritage, and every year I look forward to dancing. And I know that so with enthusiasm knowing that it represents my culture.
To me, the Galagetza is not only a way of empowering our culture, but also sharing with others the beauty of my culture. Seeing people out there enjoying our dances and our music, and hearing all the clapping after every performance inspires me to keep doing what I'm doing for my Latina culture.
So once again, thank you for all the support we have received. We have provided each one of you with a ticket, so I hope to see you there in May. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments?
Yes, good evening. I'm Robert Kavanaugh, President of the Council of Classified Employees. I'm going to give you some information tonight while I talk. I'm talking to you this evening because you should have had something on your agenda this evening regarding the classification study other than just the job descriptions which you have. The rules which I'm handing you are the commission rules, and they clearly state what the commission's responsibility is, and that is to deliver to you the recommendations of a $30,000 study that was brought to your attention, which you should have copies of. This study, there were four classes of individuals that should have been reclassed, and it's, as it says in the rules, the commission shall send that to the board, which is you, for a recommendation. And so the commission met, and I have the minutes. First one that I'm giving you is when they met and what they did. And then I'll be giving you the minutes from the meeting showing you what they did to recommend these positions be reclassed on the salary schedule, which is their job. And it's information you should have gotten in tonight's meeting. And it was unfortunately co-opted because the superintendent decided that it was something that should be negotiated, which has never been the best practice. And although we have not done classification study, the last time we did one was in 1998. And as you know, we were...
Sir Robert, are you talking about the job descriptions and things? Should this go with that job, that particular agenda item? Okay.
This should have come to you, but it didn't. What's coming to you is on the agenda, which is a good show of cooperation between the district, the commission, and the union. We're all on the same page on that. We've all vetted that together, and that's another subject which I'll address then. This is about the individuals that should have been reclassed on the salary schedule, and they weren't, or you didn't get the recommendations that you should have gotten. So that's my complaint tonight. You didn't get those. And if you'll take the time at your leisure, given that you can take no action on this, to review these notes. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask me. And I'd be happy to have further discussion with you. And I hope that you'll take the time in closed session to ask why this didn't move forward and why this didn't come to me based on the commission rules and education rule, which I've given you. That's the first thing I want. So not too pleased that we spent $30,000. And we're not moving forward on these four job descriptions or four jobs that should be economically reclassed. And that's what we've done in the past. In 1998, we did a number of them. And the commission moved them, approved them, and sent them to the board, which then the board approved. Now, you know that in 2008, we were in the midst of an economic crisis, so we have not done any reclass studies in the past years. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else about to speak?
My name is Kanae Hauser. I'm the Director of Classified Personnel. And I'm here kind of piggybacking on what Robert had to say. At the last, the minutes that he handed me were not the approved minutes. Those are the ones that we brought to the meeting, and the commissioner said these aren't correct. We need to redo them, so they're not yet approved. I have to finish those a week on, I can handle that, get those to you later. But what happened was, the rule states that the commission recommends salaries. It's really confusing, because, and it's in Ed Code about the commission recommending salaries. And the confusing piece is that we've always said that salaries are negotiated. So I was confused. Robert came and said, wait a minute, Kanae, this isn't how we do it. So what I did was I called Glenn Siegel. He is an advisor to me, and he's been involved with personnel commissions for decades. And I said, Glenn, how does this work? And he says, oh, no, they are negotiated. This is how it works. And I know that that piece of Ed Code is confusing. And it's kind of, it feels gray, it feels wobbly, but this is past practice. And you might point to this this case that happened, and I'm forgetting the name of it. You might want to refer to that for help. And then Robert came back and said, no, that's not it. So Robert and I together called George Cole to get more advice. He's also past president of the CSPCA. George said, in fact, yeah, it is. It does need to be negotiated. We need to work together on this. It's interesting that the union doesn't want to negotiate. Usually it might be the other way around. So we're having this thing right now. I wanted to let you know, my purpose here today is to let you know that the commission, the personnel commission, did discuss salaries and did discuss that they should be at least at the median for one of the positions. They discussed at length for the mental health specialist position that it should be even above the median. And again, it's their recommendation. It's only recommendation, and I understand that it will be negotiated. But I have this for your information.
Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Move on to our superintendent's report.
First part of my report this evening is really about goals one. It should be 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's about all of our work and our administrative hiring process. Because as we hire school leaders, we want to make sure that they're people that are working on supporting positive outcomes for kids and are going to be part of making our organization highly collaborative and focused on student learning. The process for our administrative vacancies, we've done a lot of interviewing since our last board meeting at the end of March. And we had four panel interviews that went between, where candidates were interviewed between 45 minutes and an hour with panels of an average of size of about 8. They also had a minimum of 2 hours of job-related tasks to complete following those interviews, and they had a second interview with cabinet for at least an hour, and we had site visits for our outside candidates as well as reference checks. We're really pleased to announce the following four individuals will be serving the team here in Santa Cruz beginning next school year. Dorothy Coito will be serving as Assistant Superintendent for Educational Services. She's coming to us from South San Francisco with K-12 leadership experience. Greg O'Mara is coming as our Director of Student Services. He has been a principal at all three grade spans and a counselor prior to this time serving as administrator. Casey O'Brien has 13 years principal experience, is coming to us currently from a student services position in Carmel, and will be serving as principal of Rancho Forte Middle School. Michelle McKinney is our own elementary math coach and will be stepping in as assistant principal at Rancho Forte Small Schools. I want to congratulate them. They're all super excited and anxious to hear tonight about their next steps and their professional journeys in support of students here in Santa Cruz City.
Can I add, here's a quote from Greg, who I just said, thanks so much, I can't wait to dive in.
In terms of goal number two, we've also, you may have read the article about the countywide threat assessment plan and was resubmitted, the work of the county was resubmitted to the grand jury for the grand jury's to show that how the county has addressed the grand jury's recommendations. The grand jury basically had a pretty positive response to the reports, but were concerned the county hadn't mandated training. I just wanted to assure you all, we've already started. We have our training planned out. We've had training ongoing. We did threat assessment training with Diana Browning Wright last spring. We arranged it actually for the county, our district. Eileen Brown was responsible for bringing her in. And we built our threat assessment plan based on the protocols that come from her work. It comes from the Secret Service research, and we have all of the county student services directors work together. They've developed PowerPoint trainings for school faculties. We've reviewed them with our principals, and we're planning to begin implementing those full staff trainings in the fall. And we also are going to do more in-depth trainings. We did an in-depth training last spring with our threat assessment team, our site teams. We're continuing that training into the fall. So I just wanted to assure you that although that was the reaction to the report and the work, I'm really proud of the county work, the county collaboration, and really the interdepartmental work that happened to align all of our first responders with us in that training and practice. And We use threat assessment protocols all the time because safety is kind of foundational to our work. And when issues come up, we have to assess. And sometimes those assessments immediately involve our SRO. Sometimes they don't. They wouldn't want us to call every time we sit down to assess something. But we're working to ensure that our teams are prepared and ready. And we've had a lot of training, and we will continue to provide that training as we move forward. A lot of work again in the community in the last few weeks. I participated in two adult education lengthy board meetings. One was a retreat. We're really working to try to refine our work with adult ed in the county. This last week, we added the county office as a funded partner to support the career technical education work and goals we want to establish. I feel like, and we also made some decisions that we're going to add someone from another outside adult education agency, maybe someone, we're talking potentially about someone from the Workforce Investment Board to join the consortium, which it consists of the president of Cabrillo, the superintendent in Pajaro Valley, me, Michael Watkins, and we're looking for a fifth board member. And that's something we'll be exploring in the next few weeks. And also trying to create more measurable goals for that consortium. It's I think we're in year three, but the rules have they've changed and evolved from the state as the consortiums have been established. We feel like we have a clear direction about where we need to go, and I'm excited about our next steps. On the 9th, we had a county trustee dinner. I want to thank Dee Dee and Patty and Sheila and Claudia for attending. It was an interesting evening with
Marshall Tuck.
And I know that the county has also invited the other candidate and hasn't been able to get a date scheduled yet. It was an opportunity, I think, also just for colleagues to gather and hear from each other and have a little social time as well. So, QILA judging on this week was such a delightful way to start my week. The Queer Youth Leadership Awards Committee asked me to serve as a judge this year, and I left inspired by our youth and all the work that they're doing to create safe space on their school campuses, their work to advocate for one another in the community, and it was a great opportunity for me, and the best part was being with the young people that night that were also contributing to the decisions we made. If you're interested, Soquel High School is hosting the awards this year, and we're trying to get a table together. If you're interested in attending the dinner, just let me know. It's May, I want to say it's May 12th. It's a Saturday.
Every day in May.
But I'll resend it. I sent it not in this weekly update, but the last one, but I can send it out again. We had a board community meeting last night. We had one attendee. Mancy and I are going to work with sites when they change their regular parent meetings. They changed the date that got the regular parent meeting date got changed. It makes it harder for us to get, and it's because we schedule these early. I understand why that those dates get changed, because parent leaders decide we want to make this at a different date or time, and we just need to follow up and make sure because that's happened a couple times this year. And so I apologize to Jeremy and Claudia, but we had a nice chat, and we did have a parent who showed up and an opportunity to check in with them. So. Nancy and Frank and Jeremy and Claudia and I had a little bit of time to check in. Gail gets to save the date, May 20th, the first time we're having it at San Lorenzo Park with Harbor High School and a field under construction. They needed to find a new location. So we are going to be excited to have a a downtown's almost events, and our students and our guests from Oaxaca are scheduled to arrive in early May as well. The musicians from La Chopa will come and work with our students during the month of May in preparation for the festival. And that is it for my report this evening.
Thank you. Student report.
At Sanders High, we're all just kind of, as seniors are getting ready for graduation, the Latinx student union, Black student union, are preparing the Latino grad and Black grad, and some students are working with administration to see how we can allow students of color to wear their cultural stoles. We're also getting ready for prom, which is going to be not this weekend, but next weekend, so we're just getting really excited and getting dresses and other attire. And then there's some organizing going on for the Day of Silence, which there should be a cool event happening next Friday at Sanders High during lunch. Not fully planned yet.
Thank you. Dan?
I don't have reports.
Well, I'd like to thank the powers that be for moving 8.3.1 to 8.3.5 to the agenda, because if it has to do with waterproofing and roofing, I'm going to have some questions.
Yeah.
And it's $2 million plus, which represents 1% of our bonds. So thanks. And we'll figure out where that line is, I think, in the days ahead of when we need to pull these things, but I appreciate that being done because they have been pulled anyway. So looking forward to the conversation with Trevor. Thank you.
No report, thank you.
I attended the monthly superintendent meeting with Ms. Monroe at Santa Cruz High. It's always a pleasure to go on that campus. I always very much enjoy it, and I'm happy to see the I know that turf is fun to play on, but the lawn that so many students sit out on front of and enjoy. I also had the opportunity and like to thank the COE for the dinner that they sponsored with candidate Marshall Tuck for State Superintendent of Schools. Mr. Tuck shared his ideas and the possibility of moving education to the forefront for dollars within the state, especially since we'll be moving to a new governor. Because there were more than three of us and the Brown Act, I usually sit at any table, not normally with the table of those that I sit here with, and nothing personal, but it gives me the opportunity to meet different people, and I really enjoy that. And I just wanted to share that I met an employee who has a student, and they are a Harbor High student, but they are a transfer in from very far south of the county. So this means that a 12 or 13-year-old decided to leave their friends in South County, and she shared with me that her daughter is incredibly happy at Harbor, has found a home, and that what really sold them was on the open house, how organized it was, and that the vice principal, Mr. Coffey, had taken note and name of the student, and so when they had the tour, he again followed through, so the personal connect was wonderful, and I just am over the moon to hear that. I know that it happens at all our sites, but I wanted it to be on record. So thanks.
Thank you. Sheila?
Well, I also attended the meeting at the County Office of Education, and it is one of the best parts about it is being able to meet up with other board members and administration. And I'm looking forward to, I'm hoping we're going to hear the other candidate for school superintendent. I went to my very first LGBTQ meeting, which I and Cindy have taken over since Allison has left, and I was delighted they were talking about, they started out by talking about whether they really thought they were doing a good job and should they continue, and I'm like, wait a minute, I just got here. And they decided, yes, they should. I agreed, it was a year-end report of what they have done, and it's so impressive that they're working on training, they're working on curriculum, they're working on bullying, awareness of bullying and how to handle it in the classroom and outside. And they announced that Community Credit Union gave all of the school clubs $500 for the students themselves to spend in terms of their programs, and I was very impressed by that. It was hardworking teachers, administrators, parents there, and I was just really impressed at the thoughtfulness and the action for a committee that only meets, you know, four times a year, but works in between the meetings. And finally, I wanted to remind everybody that the film Race to Nowhere, mm-hmm. about our ideals and hopes for education, is being shown again on Sunday night at Santa Cruz High at 4 p.m. And I would urge you to go see it. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have no report. Thank you. Okay, our next item is the approval of the minutes. These are the minutes for the March 28th meeting.
Move for adoption.
Okay. Cindy moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Student?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you.
Okay. Then we have our consent agenda. And are there any items that board members would like pulled from this agenda to talk about later? Go ahead, Patty.
I just want to comment on the Williams quarterly report. A person had brought something to my attention, and I said, well, you can bring that matter to the Williams quarterly report. And they said, no, it's not about books. So I just want to make sure that the public understands that the quarterly report is the mechanism we use for areas that need attention on your site. Should it be mm-hmm. a student talking about a restroom facility or fountains or whatever it might be. I want to put it out there. I just think that we continually get no motions, but people do believe that it is book related.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Are there any other items? Okay, is there a motion?
I move approval.
Second. Okay, any comments?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, now we have a report of closed session item actions. I'm sorry.
The board heard information about expulsion 11-17-18 for a vote in open session. The board rejected a property liability claim. The board took action on certificated classified management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. And Superintendent Monroe has already shared the appointments, administrative appointments with you. There was no information for public employee discipline, dismissal, release, or complaints. The board heard an update from and gave direction to Ms. Parks regarding negotiations with the SCCCE for 2017-18, and the board discussed one case, a complaint against employee.
Okay, thank you. All right. So our next item is our staff report on LCAP.
Our next staff report will be about how we make a very serious attempt to meet all kids' needs, subscribing to the mantra of all really needs all, led by our director of secondary schools, Director Mrs. Hewitt Hodge.
You do the expulsion.
Oh, I am sorry.
Okay.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Thank you so much.
We have a vote on expulsion. Need a motion?
Somebody needs to move because I wasn't there.
Just a motion to accept or
I move approval of the, do you have the wording?
Of the recommendation to, yeah.
Yes,
the district. Uphold the recommendation, yes.
So 1117, thank you. Thank you. Most of the students
1118.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
And I'm sorry, who was the second? Thank you so much.
Oh, no, Sheila did the second.
I abstain.
Sheila second and Sheila's abstain. Now, Frank, okay, sorry.
Tonight, our report would be addressed by both our directors of elementary and secondary, Mrs. Billy Hodges and Mrs. Mary Ann Rye.
All right, at this time, we'd also like our TI coordinators to come on. They're presenting with us today.
Up here, and you can fan out that we're facing everyone. All right, we're going to do some quick introductions. You already know me.
Renee Boulder.
Thank you.
Karen Lomas, Brent Ford Middle School.
Jenny Nixon, Mission Hill Middle School.
Steve McDowell, Socal High School.
And you know me too.
Do you want to start? You want to get the floor?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, yeah, good question.
All right, so we're presenting to you today an update on where we are with response to intervention. As you read in our board report, elementary has been ahead of secondary for a number of years, and their focus has been on literacy and reading specifically. And secondary, we've been focusing on math and some reading. But tonight we're going to give you an update on where we are with those programs and some of the data we're collecting. And we've been really excited this year as we've been able to use math and start to see what some of the capabilities are with math. You'll notice on our first slide, we have just our response to intervention pyramid that kind of reminds you that our tier one, when we use this language, tier one refers to what we're doing for all students. And we're talking about academic RTI today, so that's what we're doing academically for all students. Tier two often is like flexible grouping of students, and you'll hear about that a lot today because our RTI coordinators oversee our tier two intervention programs at elementary, middle school, and high school. So they're constantly monitoring data and determining when it's time.
What does that mean?
I know. That's the end.
Everybody had a job.
There we go.
Thank you. For
that. Yeah, we have teacher voices. We can use those. It's got good acoustics in here. All right, is this on? Okay. Thank you. That's kind of a scary sound. It's like you're in the emergency room sound. Anyways, so I was talking about how our RTI coordinators oversee our Tier 2 intervention programs at all of our different grade spans, and you'll be hearing more specifically about the work they're doing. And we'll move from there. Oh, really? This is our vision is that we're supporting all students. If they're not getting what they need in Tier 1, we're using data to determine who those kids are, and then we've got interventions and supports in place for them in Tier 2. If they're not getting the support they need there, we're still monitoring them with data, and then they move up into Tier 3. The idea is that you're not stuck in one of those tiers, that it's flexible, and that we're constantly monitoring and adjusting where students need to be.
All right, so, I can read a couple of these. In the elementary, this is the fifth year we've been doing it. Renee is one of four RTI coordinators at our elementary sites. We have a process called student learning teams where we look at data several times a year. And so this year, for the first year, we're transitioning to our math and CEAA data. We have quite a long history of using assessments such as DRA, BRI, these reading assessments that we've been doing for years. We're still doing those reading assessments, but we've augmented them with the MAP, which is a nationally normed test. So that's been really important to put in our groups. It's a team process. We use the results on that, and you'll see our process in just a minute, what it looks like. But we're looking at the data and determining groupings, what's the best instructional group. We're not, and like Julia said, we have tier 1, 2, and 3, those are our instructional formulas. We don't have Tier 1 kids or Tier 2 kids or Tier 2, 3 kids. All children can move through the level depending on the support that they need. And again, we're focused on growth, not absolute achievement.
So three times a year, the grade level team, myself, the principal, the counselor, the learning assistants, and I say all the teachers from the grade level. Anyway, we all come together and we discuss literally every student at the grade level. And we combine them into targeted groups for instruction, for reading, and then we talk about which students could be better served with a second tier of instruction. And just because those meetings happen three times a year, the groups are still flexible enough where if someone's making growth, we can move them up and keep those students progressing throughout the year. We see probably detailed spreadsheets, which I inherited. Charlene's at Bayview, and we've all have wanted to go back 5 years with every piece of information you'd want to know about a student, and we're hoping to get those put into Illuminate so there'll be a one shared data system instead of just looking at Google Docs. We've been using the CPAA for K-2 this year. We've been learning the reports. We haven't quite mastered them yet, but it's kind of an area of growth for us here. And again, with the map, we also started with second grade through fifth grade. And this is an example of a student that we had in a tier two intervention. And you can see that even though they're not quite at grade level, you can see really exponential growth just in one trimester.
You have a fall assessment. That 172 is what they call a RIT score. And math uses a RIT score, which is an incremental description of the amount of growth expected. So they take it, it's a score that goes K-12. So it divides the learning essentially into 300 bits or something, and we expect different amounts of growth for depending on where you are in that spectrum. But this child entered with a RIT of 172, and went, the next time he or she was assessed, went to 189 in one term. So that's really great. So even though they are behind, it's that steep curve that is closing that gap for that child. And the same, similarly, in the prior slide, if you want to go back quickly, Julia, that again, it's growth. And this took it three times. Oh, what happened? Went down a little bit, but again, on that upward trajectory. So that's really what we want to see. And as the year goes on, you see these bands change. The fall expectation is one place, the winter, and again, the expectation goes up with each term. Sorry.
No, I was just going to mention, too, that this corresponds with our CASP scores, and this is a CASP predictor for us. Mm-hmm. So if the students stayed in the red, that would indicate that they'd score a level one on the CASP, but they would be a standard not met. But then as they grow in the bands, the orange is standard level two, approaching standard, and then the yellow is standard level three, and then so on and so forth.
And this is level three is the met. This is the met line right there.
Yeah,
not met.
And PAHRO is using this. They're a year ahead of us in implementing MAP and using MAP data. And what they've said is that this predictor has been spot on for them. So we're going to really pay close attention to see if our data is similar and that this is a good indicator for us of where our students are.
At our last SL2T, we also looked at last year's CASP data, and it was pretty much spot on from where.
Can I ask you?
I don't know what the protocol is.
It's not within the protocol, but if I don't ask it now, it's hopeless. You said that's great. It's great because are we expecting over a period of time? Like, why is that great? Like, how much movement is not great?
So traditionally, someone that continues on, like, growing, they're always going to stay, like, they have steady growth and just continue kind of at a typical pace for them. They always stay in this red zone right here.
Uh-huh.
But because they made such huge growth, they jumped bands. Now, if they continue on this trajectory, I would say, I mean, by the end of the year almost, they could be scoring at a met standard or even, like, exceeding that. So, I mean, just we'll keep monitoring and see. Maybe the student's going to kind of slow down in their amount of growth that they're seeing. But, I mean, this to me is awesome, that huge, sharp turn up.
So they could go up in the red and you'd still think it was okay.
Well, so this is where, when we talk about special ed students, sometimes being really low in grade level and still being really frustrated that they're working so hard that their grade's still enough, or they're working so hard that they don't see the change. This is one way where we can really track that change. They still might be in a red, but if they grew exponentially and you can kind of track that, it's like, this is something huge to celebrate. And if they continue on, eventually they'll get out of that red.
Okay.
And it's this red line is the norm curve. So this is what the norm, this test is norm. So this is the growth that's expected. This is the growth without intervention. So as they cross the band, if they go steeper than this line, it's exceeding expectations.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want people in the red or the orange. That's not good. But the growth is good.
So we're going to continue to administer and understand the MAP and the CPAA. Like I said, we're going to work towards moving some of that data into Illuminate so it can be more of a shared database where we can pull things from easier. And we are currently exploring different options for adoption and piloting different programs at the elementary level and tier one, just to ensure that everyone has access to the best curriculum that's available.
So like the L, can I just talk for
you? You have to talk loud for me.
I can talk, okay. So, like the elementary schools, we also are constantly monitoring data. And the Universal Screener and Progress Monitoring tool we're using this year is MAP, and that stands for MAP is Measures of Academic Progress. And in middle school, the students have taken the MAP test twice this year, 6th through 8th grade, all students in reading and in mathematics.
To place students, we use MAP, CASP, otherwise known as SBAC, and grades along with teacher input to determine Tier 2 and Tier 3 math and reading intervention.
And our focus is looking at growth over time for the students. We're going to be looking specifically at math data this evening for middle school, and you'll notice that two of our graphs are the same, and then some of the other graphs are different. This is my second year in RTI and Karen's first year in RTI. And with our change to Illuminate, like the elementary, not all of our data was transferred from Google Docs and IC to Illuminate. So we're working, it's interesting because I think we have different ways of looking at the data that can provide you a lot of various ways to look at the students' growth. So, yes, that's the first slide. So this first graph shows Mission Hill MAP growth from fall to winter. The green shows the positive growth of students that have met their goal, the growth goal, and that goal is the norm that's given to us based on growth over time that MAP has studied based on their projected growth. And it's divided into three different pairings of two graphs, course one, course two, and course three, which are our main grade level class offerings in middle school. And you'll notice that the majority of students are in the green and have made positive growth. This graph is limited in one way because it's just a yes or no. The green are students that met their growth, and the orangish color are students that didn't meet growth. So that's only telling you yes or no. It's not telling you how much growth they met, but it's still significant because most students are meeting their goal. And students with intervention are doing equally as well as the students that are not having intervention, some a little not as well, but those students are significantly below grade level, the ones that are getting intervention. So if we look to the next slide, this is Mission Hill. 8th grade students only. The reason we focused on the 8th grade is because this is our cohort of students that have had RTI all 3 years of being at Mission Hill. So each of those blue bars represents an 8th grade student that's currently in Math Plus. That's Tier 2, getting some extra support in math. And the green horizontal line is the projected growth. Not all students have the same projected growth number, but in this case, they all have 3. Probably because their starting level is a little bit lower, so they're all about the same. And you'll notice that most of the students in this group met their growth goal, and some far exceeded it. Even the students that didn't meet that green bar still made growth, with the exception of only a couple of students. And things like attendance and other social-emotional issues are probably what has set them back a little bit to start and continues to be a struggle for some of those students. If we look at the next graph, this is the, this again is that same cohort of Mission Hill Middle School 8th grade students, and this is looking at their grades. So the first pie chart shows you the 8th grade students, 20 of them, that are currently in Math Plus, but it looks at what their grades were in the spring semester as 7th graders before they had Math Plus support. And at that point, we can see that just, so there were no students that had A's, and there were students, there were 35% of the students that had B's and C's, and 65% of the students that had D's and F's. And if you look to the second pie chart, you'll see their tremendous growth as far as their grades. So in that one, 70% of the students now have grades A through C's. And I just want to make a special note that there's still 4 students that had F's, but those students in the spring semester as 7th graders, their average was between 12 and 17%. And now all those students, all 4 of those students, have percentages that are 50% or above. So they've made significant grade growth as well as growth as far as the math test goes.
This graph is the same as Mission Hill, in that it shows how many students met their math growth goals from the fall to the winter assessment. Of particular note is that students with intervention in Course 1 and Course 2 far exceeded their growth goals compared to the regular course students. And, but like Jenny noted, these are just, did they meet their goal or not? It doesn't show how much growth they made. So if we can go to the next one. There we go. These pie charts show the math percentile change from fall to winter test administration. So it's a percentile, it's not a grid score, it's not a percentage. Remember that percentiles are sort of ranking system. If I line up 100 students, the 100th student is the highest performing student, whereas the first student is the lowest performing student. So to move even 1 to 2 percentile points shows significant growth. It is basically moving ahead or leapfrogging other students on a national level. Each piece of the pie chart represents a range of 10 percentile points, demonstrating growth or decline. If you look at the pie chart on the left, which is students with math intervention, and look at the light green, 34 students grew 0 to 9 percentile points. In the darker green, 12 students grew 10 to 19 percentile points. And in the light blue, 2 students grew 20 to 29 percentile points. It is encouraging to see that 68% of the students in math intervention made significant percentile growth. Again, outpacing the students without math intervention, demonstrating intervention students are working hard to close the achievement gap.
And then finally, we just are sharing our next step as middle school RTI. We're going to continue to refine our Tier 2 math interventions to ensure their effectiveness. And we're researching and implementing effective Tier 3 math interventions. So Tier 3 interventions would be for those students, like on my blue and green graph, those students that weren't making growth. Those students then would bump into Tier 3 to get some additional support. Grants of 40s had Tier 3 intervention. Mission Hill is adding a Tier 3 math intervention next year.
We will continue to monitor students using district-wide data, MAP, language review teams, school-wide write, and use common data points to place students needing Tier 2 and Tier 3 interventions, which will become even more refined as we have more MAP data over time.
Now that the elementary schools are using the Eureka map, which is more similar to what we use in middle school, the CPM map, we're going to continue to look at what the incoming sixth grade student needs are specifically and see if we need to do adjustments with our Tier 1 and Tier 2 instruction. And then we're going to be continuing to support our Tier 1 instruction with the change that came through our MTSS meetings with the district and also things that we've been saying at both of our sites. And we're going to be doing a realignment of the course one and course two classes to improve our pacing and to better address our power standards.
We're also going to monitor what our needs are for Tier 2 and Tier 3 reading intervention, especially in the light of the successful elementary walk-to-read programs. We're also going to further develop school-wide understanding and use of map data to further improve all tiers of instruction.
Evening. I'm here representing all three high schools, all three high schools. But this slide here looks similar to the middle school. It's pretty close to being identical because we're using the same measure. I have that second slide of the progress. So last year I stood before you and spoke about the initial success that our Math Plus students, our Tier 2 intervention, had with the grade data. Presented a lot of grade data, and I think we all were asking ourselves, okay, those could be subjective. Do you have an independent measure that could support that? And so this year, I'm here to tell you that we now that we've used MAP, this graph here shows that there is a strong correlation between math skills and the grades that kids are earning. So those numbers there are across the district for high school. And so you can see there's a nice breakdown between the A's, B's, and C's. B's and F's, it gets a little fuzzy. And as Jenny was suggesting earlier, I think we might be talking about kids that have social-emotional kind of challenges. Next slide. So with our program, again, this is represented all three high schools. This is a composite of all three high schools. The students that have had intervention that's Math Plus specifically have shown considerably more growth than the general population. Just as a point of reference, what is good growth? And a map suggests that if a student is at grade level, they're expected to have 3 points of growth for the year. And you can see here that
At high school.
And I'm specifically talking about Math 1 here. So you can see the general population is doing really well. This data was collected at the semester on our second test that we administered for the year. We will give it again here in the coming months. But you can see at the semester, our Math Plus students are showing immense growth, closing the gap. And the third slide is where we're going. Some of our work, one of the reasons why I presented the data, right, just two more slides I want to mention, thank you. Mention one of the things that this data has been useful for is not just supporting that math skills and grades are aligned, there's a correlation between the two, but this really does promote the conversation about grading practices. We really want to unify our grading practices so we have continuity from one teacher to the next in terms of what we're looking at, how we're looking at it, and it has really promoted the whole idea of common grading practices and also common assessments. Thank you. Okay, so two slides forward. Where we're going is it's vital that we have continuity among our grading practices, and that we're gathering this data in terms of grades that is consistent with one teacher and the next so that we can make timely and accurate decisions about who should be in the intervention, who qualifies. So that's part of our Tier 1 work that we're doing. And we also are trying to, of course, all this hinges on priority standards. If we're all teaching Math 1, at different rates, using different things, and we think one thing is more important than the other, then we don't have consistency across our classrooms, across high schools. So that's one thing that we are continually talking about with our teachers so that we are all using the same measuring stick as much as closely as possible. Given that we've had a good amount of success with Math 2, we are finding that there are some students that have a lot of gaps and other challenges. that we are starting to build out some ideas for Tier 3. We're in the initial phases. The data, again, there is helping us identify who these students are. And lastly, we also want to see that, given that we have a two-year math requirement for graduation in our district, we'd like to see the Tier 2 supports be extended to math. We do have some preliminary data on how our kids performed in Math 2 that continued on from being Math 1 students last year. And we found that at Soquel, if we speak to Soquel, we had 89% of our students that had Math Plus in year 1 that progressed to Math 2 without any supports, 89% of them had A's, B's, and C's. So that's the direction we're going.
And I think that concludes our presentation.
I'm sure we have questions.
Yes.
Patty. Any comments?
Thank you. I have a couple questions. For the middle school, can you speak to me? I had the opportunity while visiting Bayview to see the collaboration amongst the teachers on how they were setting up their students for the different support systems, and by the picture that you showed. What is the model in middle school for you to have the collaborative time? What is your approach, and what does the district allow for you in order to do that work?
Well, we call them ISTs, Instructional Success Teams. And so as RT, I'm constantly looking at the data. But every 6 to 12 weeks, we have Instructional Success Team meetings where the teachers of intervention and myself, we look at the data, we see how students are progressing, and then we make changes for adding and for keeping students in the interventions, and similar practice at Brent Supporti as well.
Okay. Sheila? You eat eggs, Patty.
Thank you. I found it really interesting and hopeful. Glad for the organization of it all. So I picked up on what you said about Tier 3, is that there is no Tier 3 intervention now?
So for what we discovered this year, we really mapped that there's zone of readiness to learn for Math 1, and that's a score of 220 to 240. Some students are approaching that but don't have the skills yet to really benefit from our Tier 2 intervention. So after examining the learning continuum, which shows us what the skills are that are necessary to succeed in a Math 1 program, we found that there's some kids that have greater deficiencies. So in Soquel, one of the things that we started to do is experiment with identify who those kids were, and then do something like we call it the personal initiative math support program. And in that, we are asking kids to come in at break time, lunchtime, and meet with teachers to get more individualized kind of support. Not just to fill in gaps, but also start to investigate what is behind, is there anything beyond just skill gaps that needs to be addressed? Just this week, we started talking about how we might copy something that's present in SoCal called Linku or O-Squad. We are going to try to take advantage of some of our high-level students and pair them. There's been actually a sort of grassroots effort. One of my teachers said to me, we have some students that want a tutor, but it hasn't really gotten off the ground. Well, now that we've gotten to this new population and identified here are kids that have extra needs, why don't we pair them and have them start to model the soft skills and demonstrate responsibility, or how to take responsibility and how to get they could couple with them and bring them to the lunchtime, break time kind of meetings. Because one of the things we found so far in our initial phases of this is those kids that don't do well at math, they're not always the ones that want to take extra time, their personal time, and go to spend it with a teacher. So we thought, well, we might find more success if we pair them with students that are good examples and have an interest in tutoring.
And so, other two high schools do have a tier 3 math class. It's like a double block, slower math class.
So you're saying that you don't have... All right. I thought you were saying that, yes, you have it, but you have a group of students that don't fit there and don't fit in tier 2 either.
Tier 3, we have identified them, and we are building out a first idea of what works. Santa Cruz High School has a different program where Kathy Kennedy was going to be here. She could tell you more about it. I don't know exactly what all they do.
That's okay.
They have one class period of students who does half of integrated one every day for one school year, and then they do integrated 1B, like the second half of integrated one, and want this their first semester as sophomores. Different so they take a year and a half to do 1 year's of curriculum, plus it's every day. So it's actually almost like 3 years time-wise when you consider Santa Cruz High's Excel schedule. Yes.
And the extra time in itself seems to be what works. It's not a difference in how you teach them.
You know, I think there's probably more than one way that works. And I think, you know, as we get better acquainted with these students, mm-hmm. is when we start figuring out what works, and we just aren't there yet. We have ideas that we'll be sharing, just like a year or two ago when we were talking about what are we doing for Tier 2 Math Plus, what is that? And I think the collective idea here was that there wasn't any continuity from one campus to the next. I'm here to report that we have that now. That's one of the reasons why we presented our data all as a composite, because we are uniting in our approach, and now we're sort of on the verge of doing the very same thing for Tier 3, given that we have different schedules.
Okay. I have another question, but I'll...
Yeah. Okay. Patty?
These can have very quick answers. Will we be able to take the data, especially from the elementary school, since the continuum of students, and get it into Illuminate? Is that something that we see happening within a reasonable time?
Yeah, the math data is already in Illuminate.
Okay.
You can import that easily.
Okay.
So if it's for every percentile ranking, you can actually
where they are. Yeah. And Ms. McDowell? If I remember correctly, is the Math Plus offering the zero period? I know that there was a concerted reach at your campus, which I was more familiar with than the other two, to say to students and their parents, hey, listen, you know, you're speaking to the timepiece, come on in, we're going to have a zero period. For lack of a better word, I'm going to say boot camp. Is that what Math Plus looks like now? Or,
it's a really friendly place. I wish you would characterize it.
Well,
like
I mean,
that.
because it was really just very focused in that manner.
It is very focused.
Get there, and we're going to make some gains. I mean, the whole purpose was to make gains.
Absolutely.
And so, tell me, what a Math Plus class, is it a regular offering now with Math 1? So there'd be Math 1 and Math Plus, or is it built into the Math 1?
It's a separate course. It's a co-requisite.
A co-requisite.
Okay. I say co-requisite sort of hesitantly because that would kind of suggest that we have students that are in there permanently, and we don't. It's a catch-and-release system. Some kids are there for 3 weeks, some kids, I think one of our students who is a newcomer, she has been there for 59 hours. So she's almost using that as a Tier 3 intervention, which to my mind is perfectly fine because there are a lot of gaps to fill and there's a lot of language to be learned, and her teacher has been telling me that we want to give her an award because she's made so many gains,
okay.
despite the language challenges.
Yes, so, we are following RTI in the truest sense in that our Tier 2 interventions are flexible. We can pull kids in, put them out, and that was really hard to do at the high school level, to make it a flexible situation. So usually you're in a class for a whole semester and you stay there. So we worked hard to get
that's
that.
Why we're outside the school then.
Mm-hmm. Ish.
Students, ish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ish. But just the biggest challenge for students is not that academics, it's that the commitment to being there that early.
Yeah.
Dee Dee?
I have a comment and then a question, just to make sure I'm understanding the landscape within which this intervention work is unfolding. It's my understanding at the secondary level, the math interventions are relatively new in terms of implementation. Is that correct? Is that your take on it?
One of the things I'll say about our district is I'm so proud because we've gotten out in front of this and we have had numerous schools in the county, outside the county, have come to visit to see what is it that you're doing because it's so novel.
And I appreciate that and applaud that as well. And
3 years at secondary, we've had RTI
coordinators. That's what I thought. It's relatively new.
Yeah.
I appreciate and thank you for providing us with some of your data, even though it's very early. It's really nice to see that the data to show in numbers that what you're doing is having some impact on student learning. So I thank you for that. I did have a question about the elementary level literacy, because it's like the elementary schools have been working hard on literacy for more than 3 years. The Walk to Read has been around for a longer amount of time, so you've got a richer amount of data to look at and try to understand. But you mentioned in your report that you're having some challenges in the literacy interventions, particularly that you mentioned that the need for intervention exceeds capacity, so you've got more need than you have sort of the resources and people power to meet, and that you feel like there's a need to align effective Tier 1 core literacy programs in reading and writing that effectively meet the needs of the 80 to 85% of students. I was wondering if you have any thoughts or ideas or stuff that you're working on to kind of address this challenge that you're facing in literacy development at the elementary level.
You
want
to speak to it?
I think that first slide that we saw with the tiered pyramid showing that, you know, Tier 1, it really is designed to meet 80 to 85% of the students. 80% would be, I would be lovely. Tier 2, 20% or 25%, what am I getting my number? 15%, and Tier 3, 5%. So there, that would bring you up to 100% of the students. Right now, in our Tier 1, I think you can see that in your fourth half, but we are in our Tier 2 interventions, Tier 2 and 3 interventions, because we do a Tier 3 intervention in elementary. We're serving across the district 50% of our kids.
So
no intervention program can bear the weight of that. We are in the process of adopting or beginning to investigate how to define our Tier 1 literacy program. We have teachers, our last adoption was over 20 years ago. So we have since morphed into a lot of different strategies for teaching reading. You know, some really great, some teachers have never really been trained in a program of how to teach reading. So our task this year is going to be, what are those reading strategies that we know to be effective, and how do we get everybody trained and on board? How do we send people out to see what's going on in other districts? We're piloting several curriculums as well as programs. And at the end of the year, we're convening a task force and appointing a design team, because we really have to design what is our Tier 1 instructional program, because that really has to be the base. You can't intervene without the base. And again, I'm very proud of so many things that we're doing, but really the teachers are willing to step up and be part of this effort to say, okay, yeah, what is good Tier 1 instruction? What are those shifts to the Common Core that we really all have to become so much familiar with? Why are we reaching that level of rigor that we're seeing and to see better results in that? So that's our process this year, and we have to go slow to go fast, you know. Again, Colleen, you and I had a conversation months ago. I was like, we're not ready to think about. We have a lot to learn about what we do need to do, so I'm really thrilled to be part of that process. It's really very exciting work, and the teachers are super ready to take on that challenge. And I just want to commend, you know, standing up here and saying, we have a K-12 measure common assessment in this math has been despite the bumps and it hasn't been easy, but it's really pretty amazing that we're all speaking the same language, and that information will fall around to kids in middle school and high school, and you know, finally, I think that, you know, you're alluding to a really important point. Whatever change we make in kindergarten is not going to hit middle school for 6 years. Mm-hmm. and high school for 10. So this is a long-term investment, and, you know, we have seen gains. I think the middle school will even say that, you know, even with SRI and Walk to Read, they've seen a bump. We need to, we still have some heavy lifting to do, but it definitely has been a bump.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I want to add too that Soquel Elementary is also using MAP. So Pajaro is, Soquel is in their second year. So students coming from Soquel will come with us, come to us with MAP scores. And Superintendent Michelle Rodriguez did a great presentation to the superintendents on their second year of implementation and what they're, how they're using MAP to set goals at the school sites, and individual kids are using MAP to set goals for themselves. And there's interest across the whole county of looking at, could this be a countywide assessment that we all use so that kids matriculating into to other districts might if it's the beginning, very, very beginnings of that conversation.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah. Jeremy?
Yeah, just thanks for the presentation. This doesn't really, the question really isn't for you. So I'm trying to follow the money here. So I have an RTI academic LCAP program update, and it seems like things are going very well. And one of the agreements we have is that there's some background, where did it come from, we'll get some, and we have lots of that, really commendable here. And we also will have evaluation criteria, and I and Steve, I really thank you for being transparent about it. We didn't have that data last year. It appears that we do have it this year, so that's really important. But we also agreed, the district office and the school board have negotiated this more than once, that we need some dollar amounts, and I'm not implying that you're not worth every penny. But the point is that for me, and I'm a bit confused here, and therefore I think for the public out there, what is this costing us? Because then I jump ahead to LCAP budget and staffing, and I'm not sure if your salaries can be found there. I don't.
So, Jeremy, all the LCAP budget and staffing represents is shifts, the things that we're changing
right.
from current year right. into the
oh,
next
okay.
year.
So
it's not the complete LCAP
right.
budget.
It doesn't represent that which is staying put.
Right.
Exactly.
But I get the fact that we see a $300,000 addition, and we can talk about that. But I need to know, and I think the public needs to know, what this program is costing us.
Isn't the fiscal impact at the end of that
it's
board cover?
It wasn't, and if it wasn't, it's my mission. Where, or our
I,
mission.
I
apologize.
I'm
giving
looking,
the numbers in 10 minutes.
I'm seeing that supplement third is
We could have made a mistake. It was our intent to put it in.
So here, so we're looking at this is $547,986. I guess. So I apologize for not. I see one at four elementary sites, two at 3.75 at four elementary.
The learning assistance and instructional
techs
that are also in
a
union.
And one at five comprehensive secondary sites?
Yes,
so
there's
one at each of the five. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two middle schools and three high schools.
So all I have to do is add these numbers up and I get $1.2 million and that's the fiscal cost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
There it is. Thank you. My bad.
Hey, Sheila, you had one more question.
Well, now my question has changed because I remember. So I'm just going to make a quick comment about the tutoring thing. One thing I would watch, and this is me coming from the outside world and hearing things, is the students who are very sensitive about having to admit their lack of knowledge to peer tutors. I don't think that's a reason not to do it, but I hear that very often. So I would just watch it.
Yeah.
You know.
All the tutors are going to be supervised by a teacher.
Okay. And I had the same question that Dee Dee did, but I had a different question that came to me from that data, from that those comments, which was, has what we're seeing now been true across Walk to Read, or has it gotten worse? And if if it has been true, that's one thing. If it hasn't been true, are we missing the chance to say maybe Walk to Read is not doing the job we thought it would do? Because we don't seem like we're asking that question. We're going right by that question.
I could say from the middle school perspective that Walk to Read is working beautifully, and that in Mission Hill we have reading support classes as well as math, and our need for those is lessening every year, and students are coming in as stronger readers with higher Lexile levels and now RIT scores than they have in the past. And this is only my second year of RTI, but I was a core teacher prior to that, and the students needing support were far greater before the Walk to Reads program started in the elementary school, and that we've seen huge growth. We have Tier 3 at Mission Hill and at Branson 40, and our Tier 3 is starting to, we'll have it another year, but I don't know if we'll need it the following year after that, because we have kids that are coming in and out of Tier 2, far fewer than we had initially, and their needs are being met, and they're not requiring the support. So
that,
we
that,
really see that the Walk to Read is working.
That would imply that, because we're seeing that more people are, that's supposed to be 80% Tier 1, but it's not 80% Tier 1. They're in Tier 2 and Tier 3. So what you're saying would imply that it was even worse before?
Yes, it was worse, which is why we started RTI, which is why we started providing interventions and support.
Right.
The kids that are currently in 12th grade, when I had that class in 5th grade, I had two students that were reading above grade level, two, out of my class of 30 at Baby Oaks.
And now you would say you have...
And now I would say for an average 5th grade class, it would be probably 8 to 12 kids are above grade level, another 7 are at grade level,
okay.
5 are approaching, and like
sounds good.
6 are
above. Okay, so that answers my question.
And I just want to add that, you know, in the time that we've been doing Watch League, we've had a shift to Common Core state standards. The expectation has gone up. So while we're doing this intervention, we're raising kids, we really do have to make that big jump. We can't just raise our expectations without really changing our instruction and raising everybody up together.
Mm-hmm.
So it is working, but
right,
and again, that's why we're kind of stuck between measures, too. We had the old SRI measures, and we had Common Core. Now we have, math is much more rigorous. And much more accurate, much more aligned to the SBAS. So,
yeah, and we also have the effect of when you're changing the measures a lot, it affects how kids are learning, but you have to do it if it's necessary.
We went from the old CST to CAS,
yeah.
But now we're doing the same thing with our second language learners with the CELT test now,
mm-hmm.
obsolete. We're moving into LPAC, so it'll be a few years before we can start trending data,
right.
And this is initial map data.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Dee Dee, and then I think that'll be. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Cindy.
Oh, no, please. Go ahead. I apologize. You're just doing phenomenal work, and I'm really encouraged that the middle schools are seeing the impact of Walk to Read. That's very encouraging, and I hope that continues as they move into the high schools as well. I have a question about literacy development at the high school level, and it's more around comprehension, so academic language comprehension, because I work in a college, and I find that students don't know how to read textbooks, and they don't know how to glean critical information from a textbook that they need to be able to bring to the classroom and use in the classroom. So are there plans at the high school level and even the middle school level to really...
All the way down to first grade. We're doing it too.
And I know that a lot's going on in terms of literacy in elementary school, and I'm so thankful for that. So how are we helping students use that foundation that they've built or they're building in the elementary levels at the secondary levels to prepare them for that next step of academic reading, which gets increasingly challenging?
So this is a great question that is a good segue into our next presentation about MTSS and our instructional focus and some of our plans for next year. So can we keep that?
Yeah,
come back and address that, because we're going to talk about integrated ELD and
And that will be blending into intervention work that you're going to be doing.
Well, we're going to be focusing on Tier 1 and Tier 2 okay. practices in our next presentation. But really, like Marianne and others up here mentioned, like we really need to focus on our Tier 1 because we know we're not serving 80% of our students mm-hmm. yet in Tier 1, making sure that they're all meeting grade level standards. So that's going to be one of our main priorities.
Start with that first.
Go ahead, Cindy.
You sort of said what I was just going to emphasize is that, sort of like Dee Dee was saying, that if there's an obstacle in the basic classroom in terms of instructional time, obviously you as a team and with principals and district office staff would be looking at that, that if some of the obstacles for classroom literacy improvement is actual time on task, then do we actually, I'm not asking you to answer this, but do we actually know the minutes that they have time on task? Mm-hmm. Is anybody doing sort of an instructional minutes audit as you go through the rest of these? I don't need a response to that, but just want to emphasize how critical that is to try to get to an 80% Tier 1. You've got to have the time to work with the kids. You've got to have the data, and you've got to have the curriculum and strategy. So that instructional time piece, I just want to echo that.
Good point.
Thank you. I just want to thank our RTI coordinators. They've really been the vanguard and the teacher leaders who have worked with their colleagues to think about how we best provide tiers of supports for our students. And they've been instrumental risk takers and lead learners in our organization and have informed through trial and error and cycles of inquiry, where we're going and how we're supporting our students. And I'm so grateful to all of them for leading that risk-taking and making it safe for the adults to take risks at the same time we ask our kids to take risks and learn every day. And I'm just really, really grateful for your leadership. And I'd ask if you could stay for this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is a staff report, not an action line. Our next staff report is the multi-tiered systems of support.
I'm going to go ahead and introduce this next section. I also want to take this opportunity to commend Marianne and Julia for their leadership. Mm-hmm. As we are working to make some real significant shifts in how we provide support, how we do assessment and progress monitor our students, Marianne and Julia's leadership has been instrumental in moving us forward this year, along with all of our site leaders and all of our teachers working on this every day. We, in February, and these guys are going to walk us through our process, we're working to link our resources to all of this work. It's about addressing goals 1, 2, and 3 in the district, ensuring our kids are college and career ready, making sure the demographics don't determine outcomes, and making sure that students have the social emotional supports and the safe learning environment to achieve. And I'm going to have them walk you through, and I'm hoping this all comes together as we talk about then the LCAP shifts that we're recommending as a part of all of this process. That RTI was our first step at looking at tiers of support. MTSS is the next step on that journey of really expanding those systems that exist in our district. And now I'm going to be quiet and let them tell you the story.
And we're going to invite our two middle school principals to come up and present with us at certain points during the time. You can come up now so you can introduce yourselves. And also our two of our middle school math leads, you guys can come up too. We'll have you pass the mic when it's your turn, but we might as well introduce you at the beginning. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Kristen Tilton, I'm from Bradsport Middle School.
I'm Ann Magus from Mission Hill Middle School.
I'm Pat Schaefer from Mission Hill Middle School.
Molly O'Neill from Bradsport.
All right, so we are going to start with just what is MTSS.
And there's a great graphic here that I'm not going to get into the details. There's another graphic on the CDE website that has a circle with RTI in the center, and it has like a pyramid that explains RTI. And then MTSS encompasses RTI. And really, when you hear MTSS, it's just a bigger framework for thinking about how we use all of our resources, how we develop all of our systems from a district perspective and a site perspective to reach out to our family and community, think about our budget, think about all the many aspects and facets of a school district and make sure that we're aligning all of our work to support our students and helping them to be successful. So RTI really was focused on academics and social-emotional. MTSS takes that and makes RTI a part of MTSS, and then also includes all the other systems work in thinking about a school district system and how to support students achieving. Okay, go to the next.
Yeah, this retreat was our third or fourth retreat, I think, in a year where we've taken time out as a leadership and teacher leadership and counselors and RTI coordinators have come together off campus and really studied how our systems are working. And we've looked at it, and we've come up with, okay, we need to focus on tier ones a couple of years, and we've created these systems, and we continue to refine them each year in February. This year, we took 2 days. In the fall, last year, we got a grant to join the MTSS initiative, Multi-Tier System Support Initiative. Our directors and our assistant superintendent of educational services attended 5 days of training throughout the fall and winter, and we organized these 2 days, February 6th and 13th, to bring together the leaders and to really look at our systems to see how we, you know, focus our work too. And you know, Chris mentioned that how this work is coming together. We really, in order to make significant change, we need to have an instructor. We need to focus. We can't do everything all the time. Well, so we really, it's a process of how do we really prioritize our needs right now and to make significant systematic change in our district. So we gathered 76 people, and here's their names. We had 2 days together, a week apart, and in a series of activities to really identify our focus areas and to lead this work forward. So I'm going to let you go. Oh, that one? Flipper, you can have mine. There you go.
All right, so on our first day of our MTSS retreat, you can read through our objectives here. Really, we wanted to engage all of the participants in some data so that they were familiar with the data that as directors and as a cabinet team we've been looking at to help us determine what our 4 strategic focus areas are. I know you've heard about those. We've determined that we're focusing on literacy, mathematics, school connectedness, and EL progress. So we had data in those 4 areas, and teachers, administrators, our RTI coordinators, our coaches, we all were able to look at data, talk about where we're strong, and talk about areas of need, and then tie that back to practices that we have in place at our school, and then possibly practices that we don't have yet in our school.
And here's just some of the visuals that we had. We had a group of data, for example, all the data that we've been looking at around our English learner progress. One of our activities is district sites identified all the current initiatives that they have going on right now. I mean, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
One of our esteemed high school principals commented that, I want to see more white space on that paper at the end of the day. It's kind of mind-boggling when you list, get your staff together and list, like, what are we working on? This is our work. And it, even if you line them up neatly or not, it's a lot.
Yes, so one of our tasks was to look at our initiatives and then really think about those 4 strategic areas and think, are our initiatives in alignment with where we're saying our focus needs to be?
Another activity we did is to imagine, you know, what if the sky were the limit? What could we do differently? Just let's dream big now. What could we do right now to change it? It doesn't have to be possible. There is some real benefits in thinking large, and that's a great idea, an even doable idea could come out of sometimes impossible dreams. So we went through that.
Nothing.
And then I already mentioned that we took those sticky notes and we tried to figure out what are we doing that's having a high impact on student outcomes? What are we doing that we think will eventually have a high impact, but we've just started it and it's not quite having that high impact yet, so it might be low. So we created these quadrant charts and placed all of the different initiatives and things that we're doing on that chart to help us really see what are we doing, what might we stop doing, and what do we need to refine or start doing.
And we aligned those initiatives on a 2x2 grid, graphing impact versus effort. How much effort do these things take according to how much impact are they having? Some things we didn't know the impact yet. We don't have measurable or actionable data on these things, but we think they're important, and do we continue to do them? So we had staff identify those kinds of things. You know, this doesn't take a lot of effort, but it has a low impact. And, you know, eventually we want to have things that have low effort but high impact.
Yeah.
That's the way we do business. So that's the goal. But, of course, we can't start from there. Otherwise, we just buy the book and do it. It's not that easy.
All right, so day two is really focused on using the expertise in the room because all of the people there were, whether they're leaders, teacher leaders, or administrators, are all educational leaders, all have a great deal of experience. So we took what we knew, and we also asked people to bring in different pieces of research or data that they've been working on and come together and determine what are Tier 1 and Tier 2 practices at each grade span, so at elementary, middle, and high school, for each of our four strategic focus areas that we should really be focused on. And these could be things that we're already doing, like Math Plus, for example, a Tier 2 practice at our high schools and middle school, or it could be something that we need to start doing and really investigate and look into. So we have our colleagues here to talk to you about the expert groups that they were a part of and what came out of those expert groups, the Tier 1 and Tier 2 practices.
So the expert group that I was a part of was looking at Tier 1 and Tier 2 practices for school connectedness. And what we really talked about was that school connectedness is a really big topic. And in some ways, it's difficult in that when you're talking about English or math, you have a more defined what our objectives are. And school connectedness is how do we support students and their engagement at school, but also how do we support student health and well-being, mental health, and all these things. And so it was a really broad-ranging discussion about where should our priorities lie. And the group I was in was focused on school connectedness at the middle school level, and what we really prioritized was more supports that we could use and allocate at the school sites for staffing and as individuals to really work with students and to look at small groups and interventions as specifically how they connect to PBIS at the middle school level. Branson 40 has PBIS and is kind of revitalizing our PBIS program. Mission Hill is in the process of bringing PBIS to our school. And so looking at how we can create structures that help our students navigate our school systems in a positive way.
But I think I was working in the ELA, ELD. Actually, I was in the ELD. And the reason I'm confused is because ELA and ELD both determined that we needed to work on ELD and integrated ELD to serve our students with literacy. And so looking at how that might be done, in terms of thinking about professional development and developing new programs, there's it's a multi-year process. And so next year we'll probably be doing more of the exploration and understanding the ELA-ELD framework. Perhaps having, at my site, we talked about this yesterday here in the skill team meeting, increasing the skill team a little bit to include one of our ELD teachers, and then really just sort of immersing the skill team itself initially in understanding that framework. But it also means increased coaching at the middle school level for an ELD. And another thing we talked a lot about was the social-emotional needs of our ELD students and that we need to serve those increase those services. And so we've also looked at increasing the counseling, our social emotional needs. And we've actually done a lot recently at my site around the SCALE team and continuing this work.
Beth and I were working on the math portion of this.
For middle school.
For middle school, just middle school math. And we came up with a few ideas, but a couple that we were really excited about that Beth and I are going to explain. When you're looking at that RTI data, you probably saw the least growth in seventh grade math, or maybe you didn't, but I'll tell you that's where the least growth was. And we've really been analyzing why are the seventh graders struggling so much. So what we've come up with is a course two, which is seventh grade math, is the densest curriculum that we have. The students are expected to go from learning arithmetic to applying arithmetic within a short amount of time, and there's a number of standards that they are expected to learn that they struggle with. So I'll let Beth share some stuff too.
And one of the things we were thinking of is to basically realign the standards in course one and course two so that choosing our power standards in both grade levels and figuring out maybe what could be moved towards course one to make course two less dense. And what we felt this was a good shift is that, again, gives more time in the seventh grade level for them to spend more time working on the applying the mathematics in. Also, we're looking at how we could improve our instruction with other practices. For instance, I've been going to the SBMI trainings as professional development, and I see these wonderful things, but since our classes are so dense and rich already with the CPM, there was a way that we could add to it with other strategies, I think, that would really improve our classes.
This isn't going to really cost any money to do this. Shifting, the only place where we cost some money is developing how we're going to shift it, so paying the teachers to come up with the ideas. But looking at what are the standards in seventh grade or in course two that we can either skip, eliminate completely, or push into the sixth grade standards, or push into the eighth grade standards. Therefore, freeing up more time in seventh grade to do more of the SBMI Mars task projects and looking at Jo Bullock, you know, she's a Stanford guru talking about mindset and bringing in mindset into the classroom. We need more time to do it, though. Right now, we have zero free time. So we're looking for creative ways to get more free time to get our seventh graders more engaged and, you know, doing better.
Great. This is one example of this magic that happened on that day. I mean, we did not... Everybody was in an expert group. Not everybody did everything. But then they divided into grade spans. And just by bringing these amazing teachers together, they sat down and just said, we got an idea. Let's do it. And that's how it gets done. I mean, it's pretty exciting. So, anyway. And so the next.
I just want to make sure I go back to Dee Dee's previous questions. This is a good point to talk about that. One thing that came out of this day when we were looking at similarities or trends at each grade span was that from K all the way up through 12th grade high school, integrated ELD and focus on literacy, and specifically we've been talking as an administrative group on academic language and literacy, and how do we support students, our teachers, with knowing strategies and using effective strategies to increase their ability to know academic language and to use it well. So we have some trainings that we're trying to get in the works. We have a GLAD training planned for any secondary teacher, and I don't know how familiar you are with GLAD, but we put forward, I think it was at the last board meeting, there was some information about GLAD and what that training was. So that was one of the things that came out of this day, is that we do need to do some more professional development for all teachers in all content areas on how to support literacy in the classroom. So we're developing those plans now. We know there's a need, and the Tier 1 recommendation looks a little bit different at each of the grade spans, but really we're going to talk more about those resources and what we think our needs are in order to meet those ideas.
Great.
right, oh, so what was the next slide? Resource mapping, that goes right along with resource mapping. So we took all of these ideas, and we asked the teams on the stay to think, okay, in order to make your idea work, where are you in the stage of implementation? Are you at an exploring stage? Are you already at an implementing stage? Or where are you? And then what do you need resource-wise in order to make these Tier 1 and Tier 2 recommendations come to fruition? Do you need more staffing because you need to add an intervention class? Do you need time and paid planning time? Because this is going to take like 40 hours worth of work outside of your regular school day and time during the summer to plan realignment of curriculum. What is it that each of these ideas is going to take? So we got all of that information from the participants on this day, and then a smaller administrative group, representative from each grade span, principal representative from each grade span, and then the directors and cabinet have been looking at all of our district budgets, Title I, our LCAP budget, all the grants that we receive, and trying to find, okay, how can we make all of these ideas happen and how can we move forward so that we are using our district resource to really target these four strategic areas and these Tier 1, Tier 2 practices at each grade span.
Yeah, so that, and again, that's the MTSS part. You know, how do we align our systems to really make a difference there? And I think, you know, a couple of the recommendations that is funded to a couple for elementary, for example, in the literacy area, that's like, we need a Tier 1 program. We need to be aligned in a program. Let's get on it. And it was really excitement for that. As it was mentioned, K-12, it was integrated ELD and how they need that. And, you know, I don't remember last year about this time you heard the English Learner Roadmap and our vision for English learners. One of them is that all teachers are language teachers, really, regardless of your content area. If you're teaching math, science, what art, you're also teaching the academic language of your content area. And so how do we bring everybody along with that? So, like Julia said, we've worked in the subcommittee and see what these can we fund right now? What can we put on the back burner for later? We couldn't obviously grant everybody's wish. We didn't have unlimited resources. But by making some difficult decisions and realigning, we were able to get actually movement in all the areas, some movement everywhere. So I was pretty proud of that. At the side steps is to identify which of our practices, you know, what are we going to start, stop, and continue with? What's taking our time and not really getting the results? Or what can we put? Maybe this is important, but not right now. Can we put it off for a year while we get these other things rolling? The school plans this year will be based on the four strategic focus areas. And again, we'll just be continuing to monitor data of progress now that we have a common assessment across the grade spans. So I think that.
This last slide is a great, it breaks down kind of the four major components and areas, or domains, I think is what MTSS calls it. So if you're interested in kind of a quick snapshot of all the many layers that MTSS entails, you can look through those and see really where we're focusing right now on budget and still academics, but as a district office team, we are looking at all the many aspects of MTSS and aligning our system.
And it really is about leadership, and I don't mean just administrative leadership. It goes right down to the school leadership as far as teacher leadership and how do we work together on all these levels to have better outcomes, different outcomes.
And then there's a data packet. This was the data that we used on the retreat days.
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that.
Have questions.
Yes.
Sheila, go ahead.
Okay, so this is just my wish that I want to just put out there. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking that we as a board, like we're always kind of looking for where are the areas we need to focus on, and you know, we come up with these ideas or somebody gives us these ideas. But I would love to know more about what you saw rise to the surface in that retreat. I would, you know, what ideas came across to you as being the most promising, the most effective. I'm just throwing that out there. that, you know, all those, I wanted to come see all those post-its. In fact, I just wanted to be in the room so that I could get a sense of it.
We can put it back up on the wall.
You can put it back up on the wall for me, yeah. And then you bring everybody so I can ask them all the questions. No, but seriously, it sounds great in terms of it's coming up from the bottom and down from the top simultaneously. So, but if there's some way also that we can get a sense of what are those new things that are bubbling to the surface, it keeps us from going a different direction than you guys are going and helps us to support it.
Well, I'd like to invite you to stay tuned for our next presentation, which is update, which is show the shifts. And those shifts were directly a result of this book. So you're going to get a good sense of where what the recommendations are.
That's helpful
are.
To
we
know
could
that.
Actually provide you a very detailed list.
Yeah, that's really helpful to know that, because when I was looking at it, I wasn't necessarily thinking that way, and now...
That's why, yeah. It does
flow. Were all the Gracespan Tier 1 and Tier 2 practices in our board?
Yeah, they were in the board.
Okay. I think they were in the board. Yeah, there you go.
Those were all the things that rose to the top.
Yeah, got it.
I don't mean to step on the next presentation in case this is part of it, but we, after coming up with the top goals for each of those four areas that we really wanted to focus on, we then had a principals meeting, and Kristen actually planned an activity for the secondary principals with a way to how are we going to use the funds we have as part of our LCFF dollars to support these things. And I can say that it was both fun and productive in that she took the amount and basically equated it was every $10,000 equals a dollar, and she had cash on the table. And here's all the money we have as a district, and here are all the initiatives and all the costs for each of those initiatives, and what are we going to spend our dollars on? And it became a negotiation. If we are going to spend the dollars on this initiative, we don't have them for this initiative. So what are our must-haves? And let's allocate the dollars as evenly as we can amongst the schools that are in our secondary district. And then now we have this money left. Now what's the priority with our wish list items, and kind of how deep into the wish list can we go? And it was a really good meeting and an activity, and I think all of us came away, no one got every single thing on their list because there aren't the funds to do that, but everyone came away feeling like they got what they needed and they understood how the money was being distributed, and we knew that all the money was aligned to our goals, and all the personnel as well, because part of that money was tied up in positions. And so when it was a position, it was, okay, how can we use the hours of that position to serve these roles? And that was a really positive experience that directly related to the goal setting into the budget component. Since we've had local control funding formula, I've been in the district since before that and now with it, and this is the first year we've done some collaborative, inclusive, engaging process like this to get input from our teacher leaders and administrators, and I'm glad to hear you felt included. And we've even done like more inclusive, transparent type activities as administrators too, so that we have a good understanding of where all the money is going and can explain it to other people. So
I think I'm going to just add to that. You know, in the past we used surveys and those kinds of things to get information. This was much more participatory. I'm really excited about how the process has evolved. And one of the things that was, you know, as we were looking at all of this, and I was going back and looking at all the input we've had from the parent groups, all the input we've had from our parent, our school, our community meetings, from our DLAC input, from our and our parent and staff surveys. There's real alignment in all of the things that rose to the top from this MTSS work. There's alignment with that to what we're hearing from our community about needs. And I think it speaks to how well connected our teachers and our staffs are with our community, and that it evolved organically, and there was tremendous alignment. And as we're working to write the narrative for the LCAP, can really show those connections.
There also, for me, was a lot more alignment in the budget process, where we were saying, this item, does it support literacy, math, ELD, social, emotional? No. that person, that job, is for closing that job down. Mm-hmm. And we had never really accomplished that in my experience, where we would say, we really love that person, but that doesn't align with our what we need to do for kids. And that was, we actually, there were some of us administrators who walked out of that meeting and went, wow, that was different. It felt good. It was hard, but it felt good.
Didi?
I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit. I think I heard you say that in terms of the literacy development, especially at the secondary level, what you're working on is thinking about, I think I heard you say, understanding the ELD framework in the context of ELA. Is that what I heard you say?
Mm-hmm.
And that you are looking into or exploring possible opportunities for professional development for your school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sort of preliminary thoughts or ideas or things that you've discovered?
So we have currently, we have two ELERs, an elementary and a secondary, and then we also have an awesome county office support, Sophia Sorensen, who's an EL expert, instructional expert, and they're designing trainings for us administrators so that as administrators we can be lead learners and help lead and guide this work at our school sites. So we're going to be doing those as administrators in June.
Every district administrator will be trained on integrated ELD on June 20th and 21st.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. All assistant principals, and district office are going to be there. There are two whole-day trainings. So then we're also, we've just started looking at the rest of next school year and thinking, okay, how do we continue the administrators' learning? And then we just on Friday had a secondary administrator retreat where we started talking about, okay, how are we going to use our skill team to start, what do we need, what do our skill team need? What does our skill team need in order to be able to be the experts that they can start delivering PD monthly to their team members in PLCs and at staff meetings. So really starting to plan that work. We have GLAD training that we're looking into. There's WestEd training called Leading for Learning that's really spoken highly of. There's a few other things that we're looking into, but we're exploring. We're in the exploring phase right now, and we want to be purposeful with what we choose because we want to stick with it, and we don't want to choose something and then go a different direction. So right now we also have a placemat that outlines the 10 essential practices for integrated ELD in all content areas. So we're looking at that and using that as a tool to guide us to, and what specifically of those 10 things are we going to be focusing on over the next year to 3 years or 5 years. And it really coincides with visible learning, which I'm excited about too, because the 10 essential integrated ELD, ELA elements, 7 of those are high impact instructional strategies on Hattie's visible learning list. So teacher clarity is on there as one that specifically talks about integrated ELD and with that lens, what teacher clarity means. Talks about scaffolding as another one of the 10 practices. Academic language and literacy is another. So we're gathering our resources. We got this resource from Contra Costa, Santa Clara County Office of Ed, and then we're putting visible learning on top of it and aligning the research. So we're not now doing integrated ELD, but it's visible learning in ELD or integrated ELD.
Can I just have a quick follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Have you, in your explorations, have you encountered reading apprenticeship?
No, I haven't.
Because that's something we're using in the colleges, but I believe it comes from the secondary level. And it's really about visible learning and bringing the reading process into the classroom and kind of unpackaging the complexities of academic language with an instructor, with the students.
Reader's apprenticeship?
Apprenticeship. Yeah.
Right.
And I think it came from the K-12, and they're filtering it up to the college level because it's been really powerful.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Are we going to take a break?
Please.
Okay, let's take a quick break. And thank you so much.
Thank
you,
everyone.
Thank you. very much.
Do you feel like
I'm going to take it. I'm going to go to the next one. for the goats. Going back.
With RTI and how that's evolving and growing. And that's been kind of at the core of our LCAP as we started with some initial supplemental resources. The first year we found out, you know, the state funding, it makes things so tricky for staffing and planning and everything else. We got a whole bunch of extra money at a late, like a post-May revise, and we went into June with, we have this money for staffing. We had some success with RTI in the elementary school. Do we try to expand this to high school and middle school? And we have no time to plan. So as the state's kind of structures sometimes require us to do a ready, fire, aim approach to things, we've had a few years now to have that evolve. And we're taking a next step with MTSS. The state had a goal, I think it's by 2021, of getting all districts on the MTSS framework. I think it's a pretty ambitious goal, given that they're really not giving a whole lot of funding for it. They're giving us a little bit of, there are a few dollars to support the training, but really it's been the work of the educational services team that has helped us look at our systems and helped us look, you know, we've talked a long time about how do we align our resources to our priorities and our goals. And I've, over the last few years, been trying to show how the things we're doing are connected to each of our goals and the dollars, but this has been the most inclusive systemic process that we've had to date. And I'm excited about where we are and how that's evolving and what the next steps are. So, and it was also striking how much, like I said at the end, there was alignment between the folks that were engaged in the MTSS work and what we were hearing from our other stakeholder groups. So tonight, because the LCAP timeline really is not kind to staffing timelines, we're coming to you early for approval of changes. This is not the entire LCAP budget. This is changes we would like to make to the LCAP budget based on that whole process that was just explained. And it's some hard conversations about, there's a lot of things we value, but is this going to leverage the most with, given what our goals and our data tells us and what our areas of focus are right now? And we looked at all of our resources because we knew we were losing Medi-Cal money. We knew our Title II resources were going to be reduced. We knew, and they're not going to be reduced as much as we initially thought and when we started the process, and it's, you know, it's, budget is always a moment in time. But we put all those things around the room, and we took a smaller group of representatives from each grade span, our central office, GM cabinet. We looked at those resources, and we looked at those Tier 1 and Tier 2 recommendations, and we looked at what we were doing, whether or not it was aligned to those four key priority areas. And some of the things we had to even make decisions about that were still aligned but weren't going to be the highest leverage items with the dollars we had. Something else that's also informed this is over the last 2 years, I've had multiple meetings at elementary sites with elementary staffs about concerns about the social-emotional supports and behavioral supports needed for students in ways like we've never seen before. So part of our decision-making also was around that especially for school connectedness and PBIS and providing teachers with the resources they need to remove obstacles to student engagement in the classroom so they can even access their academics. So all of those things went into that thinking, went into... And we did one round where we just looked at our priorities. We looked at the things. Secondary had more dollars to work with because there's additional. There are more supplemental dollars in the secondary this next year that are additional than in the elementary. And Kristen walked us through that exercise with the dollar bills because we got to a point where we were stuck after about, I think we had a 3-hour meeting and we were stuck. And we waited a week, we came back together, we looked more at things, and we went through that exercise, and it actually went pretty quickly. Once we had that and could start to negotiate and talk about what are our top priorities, what's going to yield the most for our kids. And with that, I'm going to let Marianne and Julia talk to you about where we landed.
Okay. So we'll start with elementary. My name's Marianne Bob.
We just prepared very briefly this summer. You have a very detailed report in there with the rationale behind the background of the programs and the rationale for the changes. So the bottom line is we are proposing reducing our math coach, our curriculum coach at elementary, as well as our English learner resource teacher. You'll see them appear back in recommendations, but we are taking the coaches out of being content area coaches and reframing them. Right now, these content area coaches, the math coach serves all of our elementary sites, four sites plus Monarch in all the teachers. It's a lot of teachers. Our English learner resource teacher in that content area is also serving all the same sites. Just like working with students, relationship is really important. And to have a built relationship with everybody is just not possible, you know. So we have a reframing of those coaching positions where they're and you'll see in the recommendations I'll put in a second that our 0.5 district technology coach has been a wonderful support to us, but that's one of the hard decisions that we had to make. Is it really in line with what we need to do in literacy and mathematics? Our primary intervention program, our child aids, this is a program that has been in our district for many years. And we decided that we needed to use those resources in another way. As Chris pointed out, some of the behaviors that we're seeing in the elementary are new and more extreme. This is a program designed to work with children really in the mild to moderate range, and each year the teachers would go through their list of students with the fifth aid and choose children that would be good for the model. They weren't able to serve the students with more extreme behaviors, but it was a very specific model. The Bright aids are also one-on-one aids to work with high-needs students that we are funding straight out of the LCAF.
Can I just add to that, Marianne?
Sure.
We put those in this year. We weren't able to hire the PBIS coach, and we had a few kids in gen ed with huge behaviors that were completely disrupting classrooms. And because we couldn't hire the PBIS coach that we'd planned for in the LCAP, instead we used those dollars to bring in these aides. And as you'll see what our recommendations are for next steps, we found a similar structure, but not what we've done this year. We're trying to build something more systemic.
Reacting to the immediate need rather than long-term. Summer school, though we've had great experiences at times with summer school, the research has shown that we haven't really hasn't had a tremendous impact on student learning. And so that was one of the decisions that we made this year, that we were better off using that money in other places for summer school. And it's interesting with Hattie's work on visible learning summer school, this one does not have a tremendous effect size. It has many benefits. We get to keep kids engaged and in school and safe, but the learning that happens is, according to the, when if you think of that impact versus effort, it's a tremendous amount of effort for very little impact. So that was one of the steps that we recommended. Should we skip to the secondary cuts first?
Since a lot of the reductions are just manifesting themselves in different forms, just continue.
So here you see these two coach positions. We're calling them Common Core State Standards coaches, and they will be coaching on the instructional practices, such as integrated ELD, such as student discourse, such as academic conversations, such as engagement, that are really common to all the elementary subject areas. In elementary, we teach everything. We teach math, science, history, social studies, English, language, arts, integrated and designated ELD, PE, art, PE, it goes on and on. So these coaches then will focus their effort on two and a half sites with a little bit of support to all of our sites and be able to actually be more present and build a relationship and actually do coaching cycles with teachers at the sites. As Chris alluded to, we were able to, by the cuts we made, create a 1.0 positive behavior PBIS intervention person/behaviorist out of general education, and this is a huge position because, first of all, it's a full-time position, so we can actually attract and have a job for a highly qualified person that can support our sites with these challenging behaviors that we are seeing in elementary school. We don't have a general ed behaviorist that we can call on. It's always difficult to support and get interventions that you can actually then monitor and support and really have an effect on the behavior and support the teacher with that kind of behavior. Our PBIS aides are coming, they're currently funded out of Medi-Cal. That's been another bonus for our elementary schools where we have somebody on site who's not, it's not a one-on-one aide, this is a PBIS aide who then can follow under the direction of the PBIS coach and the behaviorist actually implement a behavior plan and behavior modifications for a child who needs to. Might spend an hour in this class, an hour in that class, might follow a few kids, tag a few kids on the playground as far as, you know, monitoring them and making sure that they're following their program. And then, again, looking forward to the reductions in 502, we want to keep these skill stipends. Our instructional leaders are a really important part of our professional development, and that will move over to
And that's a low number. If that was prior to negotiations, that's actually 3% higher.
This I changed the number this afternoon.
You did?
This is accurate.
That's accurate? Okay.
Yeah. Just a quick story about the PBIS. We had a PBIS person here, an amazing educator, I mean, just top in the field, but it was a part-time position. And a neighboring district chapter said, if you come over here, we give you a full-time employment. And so we lost it because we didn't have a full-time position.
And we need one, from what I hear.
We do.
In elementary, we need it full-time. There's enough need at all the school sites that warrant at least a full-time person. All right, so secondary reductions, we have the full-time technology coach K-12, so half of that is secondary, and Marianne already spoke to that. Also, for the same reasons, we are not going to offer summer school in secondary. We had offered in the past middle school, summer school, as well as a bridge class, so like 8th graders going into 9th grade, and we haven't had great data, and that's a trend that Hattie sees just in summer school programs in general, that they don't have a high impact. And then we also have a full-time math coach in secondary, and our coach has really been helpful in implementing CPM. And what we found was that our coach was needed a lot more at Harbor High, and Harbor High's RTI coordinator has really been focused on science, and this year has started to expand and support math, and they implemented Math Plus at Harbor High. But because their RTI coordinator is a science background and science expert, so we all are experts in our secondary background, it's been harder for Harbor to get that math support like Santa Cruz High has, and also like Soquel has with Steve. We heard Steve talk. And Steve, he's so modest. He does much more than just collect numbers and run an intervention. He's in math teachers' classrooms right there with them. He doesn't call it coaching, but I don't know what you would call it, because he's in there helping them implement different instructional practices, looking at their curriculum with them, helping them to pace and align what they're doing, talking about grading with them. He's the math department lead in that department. So really what we've done with this math coach position is not have a district math coach for next year, but have another Steve, but at Harbor, and our math coach, Allison Blackwell, happens to be here in the audience. She's going to be going to Harbor High to provide coaching and RTI support specifically for their math department. So she's going to be a math focus there. She's been spending a lot of time this year there anyway, so it's a great transition. So since RTI coordinator positions were already a part of our previous LCAP, that did free up dollars when we took away the math coach, district math coach, the part-time, or the 0.5 tech coach, and summer school.
And then, like you saw, or like was mentioned earlier, we are receiving some extra dollars in secondary. And the exact amount is in the board cover. I don't have it in front of me. Yes, quite a chunk of change that we're getting in secondary. So based on all of the recommendations from the MTSS retreat day administrators, like Kristen mentioned, we all looked at those needs and decided on what was the most important thing to fund, and we're working on plans for all of these. So we moved the skill stipends from Title II into our LCAP for the same reasons as Marianne mentioned. The 0.2 FTE at B40 in Mission Hill is going to be for math intervention. Like Jenny mentioned, Mission Hill doesn't have a Tier 3 math intervention. B40 does, but they have some other needs. So they're going to be using that FTE for math intervention. There's a 0.1 FTE increase for school community coordinators at both B40 and Mission Hill. And then they already, Mano Mission Hill has 0.5 and currently.
They both have 0.5 from
B40.
Central.
Okay. So B40 is going to be having a full time community coordinator now with this increase. And let's see, we have a 0.4 academic intervention at Harbor High, Soquel, and a 0.17 academic intervention at Santa Cruz High. Something that wasn't mentioned in our previous presentation on response to intervention is that Santa Cruz High's unique schedule and their emphasis on math has afforded them the ability to use the staffing that they get from the district office to have more math teachers and more math FTE than other schools, because they've really made math an emphasis there. And what they've done is they have all students that are entering into Integrated Math 1 take a year-long Integrated Math 1 course. And if you're familiar with the Excel schedule, that really means it's like a two-year course. So all students at Santa Cruz High are getting that. And when we look at the data, they have more than 80% of those students doing extremely well on math and with their grades. And so this year is their first year doing integrated 2 and 3. And the students that there was concern that, you know, their kids are going to be used to the slower math pace from having a integrated year 1 that's 2 years worth of class time. And kids are doing extremely well in integrated 2.
Better foundation.
So we saw that because of the system that they've set up, they're able to really have a good basis in math and integrated ones, that they're really being successful, even though they're in a class that's half the amount of time this year. And a lot of their kids were so successful in integrated 2, they went into integrated 3, and they had more students go into integrated 3 second, this what they call Q3, quarter 3, and quarter 4 than they had anticipated, because kids are just doing well in math and say they feel supported and are being really successful. So because Santa Cruz High has experienced so much success with math, they are not in as much need for math intervention as the other schools at this point. And I don't know if you noticed, but Santa Cruz High next year, their RTI coordinator position is only going to be 0.5 focused on math, and then there's going to be a 0.5 focus on literacy. So they have a different model. And so that explains the 0.17. It's not that we're giving Santa Cruz High the short end of the stick. It's actually a reward for doing well.
Less need.
That way. And then 0.2 math intervention at ARC is going to be happening for next year. And we have a 0.4 bilingual school community coordinator at Santa Cruz High and Soquel High. Currently, they don't have school, or actually, we're not funding school community coordinators out of district funds at those two schools. So we're really, they are so excited that they are going to have community coordinators next year, especially, you know, Santa Cruz High might have a part-time one that they're funding with site dollars, but Soquel doesn't, and
So this is a
huge need.
Tied to school connectedness. One of the things that's come up repeatedly from parents that's really important to them and being connected to the school, having access to the school. We've heard from our parent leader dinners and other feedback through DVAC. And
then the last thing on here is a 0.4 activities director at each of the three high schools and a 0.1 activities director at Costa Noa High School. And I just worked with high school principals on Friday at our principals retreat talking about what is it that this person is going to do, and we're really tying it back to school connectedness and helping or having this person really be the one that is collecting data and monitoring all the different students and what they're participating in, and also being the person to plan and help students plan and support the implementation of and the communication of all the different events that are going on at campus.
With a strategic focus of engaging our English learners,
yes.
Our low-income students, our foster youth, because that is where we're going to really focus our data monitoring, making sure that all student groups are accessing co-curricular activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that all students are engaged. And they're going to help us try. I know in a previous board report you asked that we track those who attend clubs and other things. So they're going to be that person that helps us try to get all that information and data and connect kids to those different clubs and different activities that we have going on.
Okay. Ready for questions? Keely, you're first.
Okay, well, I have a couple, but I'm going to start with the simple one. I'm trying to clarify the 1.5 elementary aides for four schools. That I can't figure out how that works.
0.375 at each of the four schools. It's a 0.37. It's a three-hour aid.
Oh, it's the don't pay them benefits aid. Pardon me for saying that out loud.
Well,
that's in honor of my mother, who was one of those. Okay, so they all would have the same amount.
Yeah.
And how many aides did we go down on the elementary takeoff?
The same.
One go back.
This is the emergency vision this year. As far as the here we go. The PIT aids was the same, 3.75.
But the next one, the PBIS aid.
The PBIS right aid was, as Chris explained, that was kind of an emergency measure this year only to.
And this didn't even pay for all of it. Again, when I did my one-on-ones with you, remember throughout the school year, I shared that we had to bring in some emergency interventions.
Right, but how
this
is
only
that
paid for part of it?
How is that different from what we are adding?
How is
these
A-Bright aids cost a whole lot more. It's from an outside organization that trains they have behaviorists that train their aides. We're going to have our own behaviorist that trains our aides. Because we were having to pay for the behaviorist time at this organization as well as the aides.
So we're basically having the same amount at each school, but now we have them and we're training them.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, got it.
We're replicating that model, but with the full-time behaviorist accessible to us, as opposed to paying crazy hourly amounts to this contracted firm to come in and having really limited access.
Okay. I have another one.
Okay.
So when we spoke in the elementary on the proposed reduction for the math coach and the ELIRT elementary coach or elementary position. When you talked about the math coach, you were saying that you found that this position was not able to really have deep relationships because it was one position for lots of needs. What is going to be the difference when we've turned that into elementary coaches for the Common Core standards? I mean, there's not more time in a day that one person's going to be able to make relationships with the people, so I'm not feeling apples to apples there.
The math coach currently is the coach for all four plus Monarch, four and a half elementary schools. So that coach works with all the sites
okay.
in the area of math. this coach works with all the sites in the area of English language learner support. And again, you know, one of the shifts with the Common Core is that really the English learner support has to be in all of our subject areas too. That's one of the big shifts in how we are educating our English learners. And it really is part of our, it's not a separate thing. You know, they need good instruction. Now, these two common, the same, dollar for dollar is the same, but each of these will only be working with two sites, or one person will pick up, give some support to Monarch as well. So they're not visiting all four sites.
So, and we talked about, when we look at our CASP data and other data, there are some sites that stand out as in greater need, like Gulf, for example. And so, I don't know if this is official yet, but having the coach be 0.8 at Galt to work really heavily with...
We haven't landed on an exact number yet, but well, there, most of the work would be at Galt, and then Galt and then Westlake needs a little bit less support. Maybe De La Viega would probably be 50-50, give a number. It's still a lot of teachers to work with, but it's moving in the direction. And one of the things that we did in our learning is to visit schools that are working well. What's happening in districts that are working well? And what we're seeing is a full-time coach per site, and we'd love to be able to do that. We're taking steps in that direction.
So it's so if I can paraphrase so that I can understand, as opposed to specifically math, which is part of the Common Core, at all sites, travel time, and each, we would have one of those coaches within the Common Core to only two sites to visit, so they could build a team, something manageable in that direction.
Actually do a coaching cycle where they can be in classrooms more often and not like, see you next Tuesday, do your next month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Didi, you're next.
I'm struggling a little bit to articulate my question, so I'm just going to really focus on the activities director. What do you envision that person's job description looks like, or do you have one kind of that you're using?
We just created one, which I brought it with me so I could have it in front of me. I don't remember off the top of my head all of the details, but really it focused on what Chris had said about ensuring that our students from our different subgroups that we're monitoring are engaged in being a key member of the team connecting kids to different groups. So,
I have it in front of me.
Oh, great.
And here are some goals. Increase school connectedness for all students. Collect data to monitor student participation of all students in subgroups in all curricular programs. Support the school's efforts to ensure equitable participation and engagement of all students. And then there's a whole list of responsibilities.
That's kind of an umbrella. So, in what ways do you all see the ADs engaging with the athletic directors being engaged with the activities director? Because extracurricular involves athletics as well as all the music and the arts. And
do you want to read that line about collaboration with the athletic director in the job description?
It's in there somewhere.
See, participate in monthly and weekly meetings with principal, assistant principal, and athletic director concerning student activities.
And there's another line there about data collection.
So are the ADs going to... Sorry, the athletic... Because you're calling them both.
I know, I shouldn't have said ADs.
Are the athletic directors also going to help collect data regarding...
They're
going to
do it in collaboration with the activities director.
Okay.
They would collect it for athletics. And we've talked about that,
And then the activities director might go deeper in terms of the extracurriculars that outside
theater,
of athletics.
Music, band,
clubs, those kinds of things. Okay,
great. Ski club, that was my favorite.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Sheila. Thank you, Dee.
Okay, so I'm going to stay with Dee Dee's activities director thing for a minute. I am wondering what, in terms of how you think about it, what about the kids for whom? The problem is not whether they need to be encouraged to be part of a group that's there, but that they actually have other ways to be connected that we are not addressing. And it sounds like we're making an activities director. I'm just seeing some of the kids I've talked to who'd be like, they're going to now force me to be in a group. Are you kidding me? You know, I work. I have my friends. I play, you know, sport. I do all these things. And now you're going to force me to be in a group because that's how you're going to prove that the school is connected with me. That's what they would say. So I want an answer.
We're not going to force any kids.
That's what they will say. That's how they will feel. You know, you may not think that.
No, but we're not going to force it. We're going to monitor, and we're going to look. And what we need to do is do a baseline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, who's connected in our schools in these ways? And I think we're going to need to be also thinking together as that cabinet group that's going to meet once a week. What are the non-traditional ways that kids are connected to school? And
how can you bring that into the school so that it's actually part of it?
So that's going to be all part of, and what we're going to have now is a resource to help support it and to help monitor it and to help drive the conversation. We're not going to force, you know, we're not going to say every kid has to be involved in school, but we want to make sure that our co-curricular programs are representative of our student population.
Right. So it's... Every kid's activities are valued by the school, I think, is a way that if you think of it that way, then you're bringing the activities into the school sphere, and they're not on the outside if they have a job after school. You know, it's part of...
Yeah, and creating ways, you know, there's kids, you know, kids are going to have lots... If kids have a venue, they're got lots of ways to think about how I could... You know, I'd love to create an opportunity to gather with people who like to do X... Mm-hmm. And it may be completely different from what we're doing right now, but to have someone that can be the think partner around that is going to be really helpful.
Principals talk about going out and just talking with kids and doing like empathy interviews and asking them questions like what things would make campus better, really gathering that baseline data. And also they talk about making kids leaders on campus and having this person work to make sure we have leadership opportunities for our kids on campus and providing ways that don't exist currently to get engaged. And one of the ways was like student government. This person would help run student government.
But then in addition to that, there's other things that are happening from a kid's perspective that are going on. For example, right now, the leadership at Santa Cruz High School decided to have a connectedness activity whereby they are more intentional at identifying kids who are loners and introducing themselves and getting to know them with questions and becoming partners with them. And so the kids are playing a role in these kind of activities as well. So we're trying to address it from a number of different angles. The kids are really excited about this kind of stuff.
Okay. I have one more small one after she has her.
Okay. Go ahead.
Summer school. I know you talk about John Hattie, but just earlier we were talking about 7th grade math curriculum and why our students aren't focused, and I see this, and we listed it as elementary, and then we had Math Bridge, which was grade 9 and above, so we really didn't have a middle school.
We did have middle school.
Yeah. And so I'm hearing your rationale, but I'm not necessarily buying it. And I would like to just be able to see, in retrospect, as we go into the fall and then further, why we might want to bring summer school back as a value. Because our children have a lot of time on their hands. I think I did summer school, but it was more along the piece with the activity director where we had sewing offerings and different offerings that kept us busy, but we did math skills. We had different skills that were offered in a different way. So
I know a lot of CTE teachers have a lot of ideas about that. They've run summer school in years past where they do like little...
I would shift dollars in that direction if it ever came into that.
So there's ideas that are out there, but the ideas have been coming out like in the last month, I would say. So it's not something that we're prepared to do right this second. Yeah. And when we look at our 4 strategic focus areas in math and literacy and school connectedness, it's...
Well, I would think that there are a number of CTE programs that could incorporate all of them. My husband's a Mason. He has some incredible math skills. I just say that out loud. I like to keep children busy, and I know so many parents count on the education system for that. So I think that there's a negative impact, and if we can reach any of them, these are very, in the big budget, small dollar amounts. It's something to keep in mind, something I'm concerned with, and I feel it needs to be on the record.
Right, because we didn't just run summer school out of this budget. It cost around 90-plus thousand to run secondary summer school.
And we had limited participation at middle school and a lot of attrition in the number of kids who participated over the course of the last few years. And it's tough to get our teachers to teach it. And that's part of the reason. And, you know, years when we can get really strong Santa Cruz City Schools teachers to do it, it's more effective. We haven't been able to recruit and get our teachers, our own teachers, to do it consistently. And we haven't, for the cost, the price point per child, it just, when we look at the other things we could do during the school year over a greater period of time and impacting more kids, that's what influenced our decisions. If we had unlimited dollars, we'd be really excited, be offering a lot of summer enrichment programs. We just don't have that right now.
Okay, and I appreciate the honest answer on that. And I would probably have been one of the people when you asked for the over-the-moon ideas would have posted it the whole room, because I think that I still see it as an opportunity. I know that you're showing me effects that are not cost effective, and obviously the trade-off for the needs that we'd like to put into the regular school year. But start thinking about it differently, because I bet you could build an incredibly rich program that would serve us well and take the weight off of needing the extra programs during the school year. The world's changed a bit. Teaching is tough, so I think when you hear that your CTE teachers are willing to start designing something, let them know our four areas of concern and what would they build, and see if we can make it happen. Yeah. Thank you.
One thing I want to mention, Beth Schaefer was here earlier. She's going to be attending a workshop about a week of summer camp, even though we're not able to offer it in the immediate future. This, you know, some kind of innovative program where they really focus on the latest brain research and growth mindset, how do children learn, and what is visual, creative, engaging that looks like. And so one week kind of summer camp. And so I really could see absolutely in the future offering these things as we get, you know, things that work and we are strategic with the dollars.
And it would be probably more possible to recruit our own math teachers to do a week summer camp as opposed to the longer.
We've built that into the migrant budget. So with migrant money, we can train a teacher to be able to provide that for migrant students first initially, and then, but it's going to benefit everybody. We're talking about our own teachers.
I appreciate you hearing that out. I like to come from that mindset.
Right.
You know,
so
I know
there
that,
are models out there that do work, exactly.
Thank you.
Not just close off to summer school.
No.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I do like the shorter thought of the shorter program, because it incorporates what Hattie has to say and addresses the needs. So we'll see.
And it's important to remember that Hattie is just one national researcher.
Right.
There's others who would argue that our kids lose a lot of ground because of the 2.5 months of not being in school.
Mm-hmm.
So folks can argue both sides of the fence,
but
we have to make an economic decision, which is often tough.
Well, I think we've looked at our own research for the past couple of years, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're hearing that more in a lot of research now. They're questioning that.
Well, Didi has a question.
Well, and one more little thing is we're studying. We have excellent programs. Like Boys and Girls Club is really have a really good program. They have clubs now in Scotts Valley, Live Oak, in downtown. In fact, I just walked in because we're doing a collaboration with them, again, for our migrant students. But they are really happy to have people, and they have academic programs in the summer. They have field trips. Really great things. So, you know, if we could get people hooked up with these things that are already happening with other community-based organizations, they're set to go.
And Boys and Girls Club is incredibly affordable.
Oh, it's great. It really is great. And they have scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
They have scholarships.
Can I just, I want to build off of Patty's idea of thinking outside of the box for summer school, given the limited resources, and if there's a way down the road to connect it to CTE and perhaps summer internships that are building job skills, but having students see the application of all this stuff they're learning sitting in a classroom, and bring in service learning or kind of community service, I think it would just, you know, we think about building citizens, not just academic minds.
Great idea.
It connects them with the community and with the business community as well. And
we have such passionate CTE teachers. I think it's a good avenue to explore.
Someday down the road, that would be exciting.
Sheila.
I like both of those. Okay, so PIP. The way PIP was talked about in this, I had a little bit of trouble with, because the actual, I didn't know if the role of PIP had changed, but that it was more of a, it was for kids that weren't really troubled, but was kind of a crisis, a very light touch crisis kind of intervention for, you know, normal kids who might have something really unsettling in their life. And in my experience, I saw that as very helpful, because if kids started to go off the deep end with a divorce or a, you know, something else that happened, it often just righted them, and then you could let them go again. So I know it's partially because it's been around for a long time and I'm fond of it, but I'm trying to justify in my mind not having that, because I don't think of it as like a, whatever you said, mild and moderate program. It's a, it's kind of a, if you want to, avoid having a lot of traumatic responses, think in small and simple ways of connecting an adult with the children who need an adult connection, and then they can move on. Then you just send them back out. So I actually like that model, and I think some of what you've talked about is that model. So I'm wondering how come this model has to go. And if you tell me the only reason is because you want to fund for the really difficult kids, I'll accept that. But I have a hard time wanting to close it down.
To what you said, if you want. So, you know, Sheila, it was for the mild to moderate. And when we would sit down with the PIP aides and go through, that the teachers had to spend hours evaluating each of their kids. And then we would sit down and go through them. And there was always frustration on teachers and like, why won't you take Frank? He really needs a Frank. He really needs someone to sit with. And they'll say he's too above the needs of PIP and CERF, which is true. So, and the other issue that came up, which was teachers were guarding time in their classroom and didn't want that kid leaving for 30 minutes and then coming back, because then it took another 10 minutes to try to get them re-engaged in what was happening. So it was getting a bigger struggle. And I don't know if that changed with kids coming and going more into different activities and really valuing the time that they have as a class. And the behaviors have changed.
And I mean, so we didn't have elementary counselors when we first started PIP, and that PIP was serving a role that now elementary counselors can really see serving that role.
Do you think that's true? Do you think that the elementary counselors see those kids? Because I would say no.
In elementary counselors, at least, you know, they do small group work, and they'll do a group with a friendship group, they'll do a social skills group. I can see them doing a divorce group, and they work with groups of kids, which is really, in my opinion, a very effective model, rather than the one-on-one play therapy that PIP is built on. I mean, I'm not saying that PIP wasn't valuable,
right.
But in a world where you have to make choices, I think that this is one of the ways that we are, you know, tweaking our services to fill our needs. You know,
Okay, so I'll go for that reason, and I'll go for one, and I'll go for three, but I won't go for two. Because, you know, I think we can go too far with this, they should never leave the classroom thing, because sometimes kids need that. But, okay.
In the landscape, I think it is true a little bit, and this is a little bit off topic, but the, you know, we're blessed with lovely art and music and LifeLab and library, wonderful bond support or partial tax supportive measures that are just absolutely wonderful. But it's a bit of a curse in where you're trying to get that protected instructional time that Cindy referred to. So it's like,
one of the things we did earlier this year is send out a survey to all the teachers, you know, how much time do you spend on reading outside of our intervention, our 40-minute, everybody's doing the 40-minute intervention time. But that time varies from a half an hour to an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So one of the first tasks we need to do as a district is, how much time are we going to teach reading? And truly teachers are saying, my day is so interrupted with these specials. And, you know, I was always very blessed because on the west side, Westlake would take the specials in the morning. I got the specials teachers in the afternoon, being a more Title I school. That was a wonderful thing. It's hard when you have specials all morning long. Mm-hmm. And, we'll do a half an hour reading, but then they have to go to art, and they get to go to art. And they'll do Grum. I mean, they're wonderful, wonderful programs. But it does come down to a question of being, the day is much more interrupted than it
used to be. And I agree with that. I can see that, and it's a dilemma that a lot of schools don't have, so I think we're blessed with that dilemma.
Exactly.
However, it's interesting how it turns when it's the kids that really do need some one-on-one help. All of a sudden, it's like, well, we can't let them go out of the classroom. You know, it's like those are the kids that in high school you don't mind having them in the Math Plus, you know, because they need that extra time. So in elementary school, sometimes they need that extra time. And that's where, you know, it's okay for art and music, but it's not okay for these kids that really need that one-on-one time or two-on-one time. So that's my caution, is to watch that, because I understand the teachers. I mean, I hear it all the time, that the teachers are like, we don't get enough time with the kids. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry I didn't see it. Go ahead, Cindy. Thank you.
Just an overview thought. It seems to me that the reductions and the additions are very well thought out and very aligned, and I applaud the conclusions that have been arrived at here. So,
would you like to make a motion?
Yes, if everybody's comfortable with that.
I said
yes.
Move for adoption.
Okay. And Deb seconds. All in.
Do we mind?
Oh, I'm sorry. Comments from the public.
No, I do have some concerns.
Okay. Was there a second on that
paper? Yes,
yeah. Yeah, I have some concerns. A number of concerns, but I'm going to start with, I guess, the higher ones, and I have concerns. I agree with you, Sheila, the PIP aides, I represent them. You know, I've got one woman, she's been there for 25 years, and she's seen the results of that. And I don't know if anybody spoke to these PIP aides, talking about some of the successes they've had over the years. You know, you're talking $16,000 a year for a PIP aide. It's nothing. And when you look at the results, that's... We talk about prison pipeline. When are we starting and when are we stopping? If we can do early intervention, and those people are key in that. And to ask principals to make the Sophie's choice, oh, you get a PBSIA or you get a PIP person, one or the other but not both, that's crazy. And for the amount of money we're talking here, it's chump change. So I would really encourage you to keep the PIP aides, because I think they're valuable. They've been a valuable asset for the district forever. So, you know, don't throw the baby out of the house. And then I have some questions on some of these positions. You know, these are certificated positions, the PBS coaches, they're certificated, or they classified? The activities directors?
They're certificated.
They're certificated.
The coach is certificated?
Yes. The PBS behaviors and behaviors is a certificated position.
And the activity directors?
Yes.
Also. And then, you know, I've watched the district over the years, so it's the final thing I'm going to say is over summer school. And Patty, you're right. You know, we lose a lot of kids over the summer, things that probably, maybe they should be in summer school, not in the children's system. That's what we decide. I agree that summer school is a valuable program. And I've seen it over the years just slowly grow. And now it's right there. Total
elimination.
It's crazy.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, I'll call a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained?
Thank you.
All right. Our next item is 8.5.3.1.
So part of our classification study that we've been working on, we have about half of the job descriptions coming to you this time for first reading. These have been approved by the Personnel Commission, and they need to be approved by both, by the Commission and by the Board as well. So the process that has brought us here included surveys, input from staff, back and forth, face-to-face interviews with viewing. People had a chance to express their concerns, got a letter back from viewing saying, we understand that we've added this, or this was, we're going to stay kind of with the recommendation. So there was a lot of input and feedback during this process. So I bring forward to you for first reading the job descriptions that are in your packet tonight. And I would anticipate bringing back to you the next half, probably the beginning of June, if not the end of May. I don't know when the end of May, but.
Okay, Patty? And Molly, I'm sorry I didn't ask this beforehand, but it occurred to me as I was reading, there was lots of them, and I watched the process, and so I was happy to have the review, first of all, from the district. It had been a long time coming, and I know that Ewing had led the process, and I saw as it continued more and more people becoming part of it. In the first pieces rolling out, the employees were... I don't want to call it slow, but it wasn't quite apparent to the benefit of what was happening, so it became that way. So I'm very happy for that. But what I did notice as I was reading some of these, I was reading the classifications, some have salary ranges and some do not. And I'm not quite understanding why. And it would be good just to see what those ranges are. So there would be like a range 29, but I get to a job, and this might be because it's a new description. I'm not sure, because our packets were given to us maybe two or three board meetings ago, the whole study from Ewing, that the delivery driver for food and nutrition service, it doesn't have a salary range. Mm-hmm. Does that mean because it's brand new, or because...
You know, that is one that you can look at the information you got, that is one that came out different on the compensation study. Yeah. So I don't know if that's it, Patty, or if it's just something that's not been included in all of them. So I can go back and make sure that is included.
Well, some do have ranges.
Well, no, she's saying there might be the ones that weren't included.
It could. I don't know, Patty. Yeah. It could be. Those are the ones that came on the compensation study as not being in the range of the medium.
Right. Oh, I see. Which is what was being talked about prior to.
Right.
Okay.
Or it's just it's just inconsistent, and we need to go back and check all the ranges. So,
I just was confused. I'm sorry I didn't get that question to you earlier.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
I'd also like to know which one of those two things it is, if you could let us know.
Sure.
Are there other questions? Okay, the recommendation.
Maybe one more.
Okay, go ahead.
So we have it as a listed as a
first or
final.
Yeah.
Would it slow anything down to not have this finalized as we're moving through the mush?
Not necessarily, because we still have the other half to bring to you. So if you want more time on it, it wouldn't slow anything down. I mean, we'll have them hot and ready to go beginning next year. We will like them before summer, because we do a lot of hiring over the summer for classified jobs. So, you know.
Is that going to be a straw move to the next camel's back to break, though?
To get the next ones?
No, I mean to be bringing them all. Well, I guess you have them as you'd like them proposed here in front of us.
Yeah, I've reviewed them with Kanae. Some Chaka joined us for some of them. Commissioner joined us for some of them. Like I said, they've read them and they've approved them. So, you know, there's not a huge time crunch. Probably will be more of a time crunch on the next section we bring you. But, you know, we'll bring them into action as soon as they're approved.
Dee?
So
So I just want clarity. If we treat this as a first read and you bring it back to us with the rest, would we be able to have some of that information that's not included here? Because it sounds like things are still in the works.
So the only thing that's not in there is just the range. So
the range, yes.
That's the only thing missing.
And these are going to come back to you on the 25th for a second reading, so Molly could have that information provided by then.
Oh, okay.
If this is the first reading tonight, they'll come back next week for
next
the final.
Next week, okay.
Yes, next
and
week.
I can definitely get that.
That would be great.
It's not a problem. Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Yeah. Go ahead.
Including the ones that we were discussing that there was some question about? Will that be resolved by next week?
So this is a job description. So that's different than the salary. So that will happen differently. These are simply describing the job that.
But they have the salary ranges, and if you.
So that would be a part of negotiations.
So that would be part of negotiations. So if that gets changed, then that range would get changed.
But that wouldn't happen by next week necessarily.
No.
But we don't have to have that happen in order to vote
no.
for it. Okay.
Because.
So we need to go through and put current ranges in.
Well, yeah, and the commission, that's, you know, more what they're working on. And you guys are just approving the job descriptions. But I understand the range is important to know.
Okay, so
go ahead.
So this is part of the discussion I brought to you earlier, which is in the notes that I gave you. I was a bit surprised that it didn't come to the board. It should have come to the board. Then you would have those ranges and then you'd have those recommendations.
Yep.
I do want to say that we have collaborated on the job descriptions. And that's been good. And that's what should have come forward tonight, should have been the recommendations from the commission on those positions that don't have ranges. It would have had ranges and you would have been able to act on. And I disagree with the superintendent, and I pointed out to the assistant superintendent of business services, are we going down a new road here on negotiations? Is this going to be something we're going to do from now on? Is this going to be where I'll say, oh, okay, so the district would like to negotiate with the job families, so food service workers will negotiate independently? Because as it stands now, I currently negotiate for the entire bargaining unit at one salary range, not independently. So we'll say, we want to 10% raise. We negotiate from there. I don't go, oh, the food service workers want 6%, custodians want 7%, delivery drivers want 10%. We don't do it that way. We negotiate 1%, percentage overall. But if we're going to go down that road, this will be an interesting, it will be a whole change than anything I've ever done in my time. But I could entertain that. It might be entertaining to see the food service workers negotiate with the district for a salary. This might be. So this is interesting. We want our cake and eat it too. But that is how it works. Commission rules are clear, that's ed code, it's clear, and it should have come to you. And why it didn't?
So,
that's the question that the superintendent answered.
So what it is that we see that our legal counsel is interpreting that ed code differently.
So
leadership and personnel commissions are four personnel commissions in the state interpret that differently. I know it's tough when you read it. You know, we could see different ways, and which is why we've sat you down with us to talk to those people. We want to do it right, and it's not, we're not, no intention to be dismissive or disrespectful to the unit or anything like that. We want to collaborate. We want this to be a good relationship and to work well. And we're going to need to talk about it. We haven't had to do it this way before, so it's new for all of us. Mm-hmm. So thinking about how do we go about that, and we'll want to continue the conversation about that, about how do we make this work. But we're being told as a district leadership team that it really needs to be at the table. So we're going to need to come to the table and have that conversation.
So I guess that's the case, that I want to know if that's the new direction from the board, and we're going to negotiate by the job family.
So Chris, I'd like to return that this is about job descriptions, and the question was about ranges, which we'll solve.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I went off. I'm sorry.
I just, you know, I'd like an answer so I know how to proceed with negotiations.
It's not up to us to decide, but how we're going to do negotiations during this item. We're just discussing the job descriptions, and I would appreciate more information from have any more information from you regarding negotiations, because traditionally we don't participate in discussions in open session about how we negotiate.
I agree.
So I'd like to just continue this item, and I'd like more information from Robert's concerns for us to discuss and goals.
Thank you.
So again, I'll reiterate, we did collaborate on the job descriptions, the union, the commission, and the district, which has been fruitful. It's also our members have been participatory. So I would encourage you to move on to job descriptions.
First reading. Patty, did you?
Are there any other positions in there that didn't have the salary range? Or is it just that one?
No, there were several.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was my only question. Right. Mm-hmm.
So, Michael, that's why I'm saying it could be just something that we just did make sure was on all of them, or it could be related to the compensation state. I'm not sure.
It could be either a typo or something related to.
Exactly.
So
Deb
is
the
first on the first reading.
First reading, second, but it's a first reading. Patty, seconding.
Thank you.
Okay, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Thank you. Okay, our next item is to approve
Sunshining SDCCE. Mm-hmm. So I bring forward the Sunshine item from SDCCE. And they can see that they've opened this year implementation of EB-119, which is about orientation, and the other is about wages. So we are scheduling our first meeting, hopefully on the 27th of this month. So I bring forward for recommendation for approval.
Move approval.
Second.
Public? Okay. Aye. I said public.
No, I just hear everything. We look forward to negotiating with the district, as you've seen in your third year budget outlook, 6.5% reserve. I haven't seen that in a long time, probably 15 to 20 years. So that's good. And as you well know, as Rich was spoken at the governor's budget hearing, the marijuana tax money is coming. There's going to be money.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? And the meeting is adjourned.
Sorry, I overblocked.
Didn't we have something that we were going to do later that we didn't do?
That we're going to do later? The one that Jeremy was talking about. Did we do that?
Yeah, we did everything on here.
But he didn't yell.
So I think we must have done everything.
I'm going to sneak in here between the ladies.
Since I don't know what it is, I'll play.